What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 111 of Valley Town. I'm Chan Man V, and joining me, of course, is Noxious, my co-host. What's up, buddy?
Not much, man. Not much in the Hearthstone life.
Not much in the Hearthstone life, man. Where have you been? Where have you been the last few
days? There's a lot, but there's not enough yet. I still don't know what's going on. Like we've seen a few cards from the new expansion, so
the drip,
not much.
Let the drip feed commence, right? But I want to welcome to the show the dirty rats of the Hearthstone community. Ratsma, what's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up, guys?
And then, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's pretty much it. Okay. I was going to make a comment on
what's up, guys?
You invited two guys with rats in it, but
also that you chose to call us dirty rats and not the rat pack.
Oh, the rat pack
could have been a little bit nicer.
The rat pack would have been so much better. Shoot, Anyways, the rat too. What's up, buddy?
Not so much. It's going good. It's going good.
All right. Good. Well, anyways, lots of big news in the Hearthstone community. Lots to talk about the expansion. So we'll be spending a lot of time on that, as well as the patch was released, and including the patches were the big arena changes. So Ratsman's going to give us the lowdown. We haven't had in a state of the arena type of episode in a while, so Ratsman's back to give us the lowdown. HCT Asia happened last weekend, and boy, was that interesting. So we'll just touch on that a little bit, and then Q&A at the end. So, Journey to Ungoro. That's right? Ungoro, right?
Ungoro.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I listened to Ben Bros say it, so I'm just like, probably Ungoro, if he says it that way.
Ungoro, okay.
Seems good.
Man, they made that California backyard really look like a jungle.
I know, right?
Was that really a California backyard?
No. I'm assuming. I mean, did they go out of Orange County to shoot it?
I was assuming it's like a green screen or something like.
Okay, sure. Maybe. That
looked pretty real to me. I think it wasn't definitely like in like a real environment.
They had some props, that's for sure, like ferns and stuff like that. But but anyways, the new expansion, you know, is awesome. I know the leak came out like a while ago, so we kind of knew it was Journey to Ungoro, and it was, you know, going to be a bunch of dinosaurs and whatnot. But this is the official release. They had a video too of the two, you know, Ben and the two of them just out there in the camp and whatever camp, camping outside and just telling us a little bit about it. But I guess the big announcement is that they announced a couple new mechanics, as well as a few cards that were, you know, give us an example of some of the class cards that are going to be around. So why don't we start, let's just go through this post and start with the first thing that we see. So first thing says adapting to their surroundings. They show a volcano card, which is a shaman card that's 5 mana, rare, deal 15 damage, randomly split among all minions, overload 2. So, given that elemental destruction is disappearing, this seems like something that might at least fit in the same slot, that, you know, that gap that's going to be there whenever elemental destruction is going to be gone. What do you guys think about this card?
RNG.
RNG, baby.
That's it? That's all your thoughts?
That's
cool. I don't think about it like that at all. Like 15 damage is so much. Usually, like, you clear the board. So, basically, the idea here is that, well, A, it doesn't overload you for, like, all your mana, which is a huge problem with the LED. The card's basically unplayable unless you have the Lava Shock.
Yep.
But Volcano actually has the added benefit of being able to take, like, a solo Mountain Giant out.
Yeah.
Or, like, a Mountain Giant with another minion, which is important because it's, like, right, it's, like, a critical flaw in AoE spells like this. Like, well, what if my opponent just plays a big guy? And then all of a sudden, my spell just does 4 damage to everything, but only has one guy. And it kind of solves that problem, which is, like, good, but I don't know if the card's good.
Yeah.
It's an interesting card to play around, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got to think, like, how, like, what kind of, like, formation of minions do you need to play around Volcano? You think you could play this with, like, Acolyte of Pain in Shaman?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's something you would want to include in Shaman, because they're already so stacked on threes.
Mm.
But the idea is definitely, like, playing around it, if you drop Acolyte against a shaman, suddenly that turn 5 removal looks a lot more awkward.
Yeah.
You know, like kill your board, draw 3 cards, seems bad.
Outside like, of that,
just
though,
feels awkward.
Outside of like playing Acolyte, like how do you really play around the card, which is kind of a problem, right? The card's, unless if I'm not playing minions on the board as a shaman, it's actually like quite hard for my opponent to play around Volcano.
Yep,
exactly. Because like, you can't go tall and you can't go wide.
Yeah.
So Shaman,
tall and wide.
Yeah, tall and wide, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So Shaman with another good tool in their tool.
I think it is a great tool. Yeah. I think it's, yeah. I almost want to say underrated. Like the first reaction of all my chat when they saw this card was, oh, RNG is being pushed into Hearthstone again, which of course is the stupidest thing you could say about this card. I think of all the things you could say, this card is very consistent at doing what it does in the right archetype. And I mean, that's kind of spooky, like if you think about where it fits.
I mean, it's a control archetype, right?
Yeah, but it's really difficult to counter it. Like if the Shaman just decides to not give you breathing room onto the board, this is better than destruction for the most part for them.
So let's debate that a little bit, whether it's better than destruction, because definitely versatility wise, no question that that's where the biggest argument for this card being better than destruction. But though, you know, obviously we've played a lot of control Shaman, at least I know me and Noxious have. And, you know, elemental destruction being at 3 mana was always a really great thing, given that I could play something behind it, you know, something significant.
Like Lava Shock?
I mean, well, you can play Lava Shock either that turn or the next turn. It was really dependent upon like what you had in your hand. But you could play up to 7 mana behind it a lot of times. And, you know, 7 mana from a standpoint of tempo, I mean, that was very key in a lot of situations. And so that I think that smaller mana cost up front ended up working out. Even though in the end, this ends up costing like one more. I think Elemental Destruction ended up costing one more at 8. But the cheap up front aspect to it was very crucial in my opinion. So what are your thoughts on that?
Go ahead.
Like, so you very rarely ever use LED on 3, so the mana cost is like pretty irrelevant. Like let's say like as an uncurve removal, like obviously there's like, like situations where you would, but I'd say the majority you aren't using it on curve. So like obviously 3 mana you can play something often alongside of it, but I don't know, I play against a lot of Shamans and I feel like usually they end up having to remove the board before turn 10, so I don't see like necessarily getting a 7 drop. Like also since this does cost 5, if you want to talk like turn 10, you can play a 5 mana thing. Ultimately, like, you would build your deck so that it would run cards that you could probably play alongside of it in the end of the game. Like maybe before you'd be able to play 7 drops with LED, but now you just play 5 drops instead. But I think that, like, with Noxious's point earlier, like, 15 damage is a lot.
It is.
Like, if I don't have any of my own minions on the board, it's almost always just going to kill all of your minions.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the death rattles would trigger in during the card. I'm pretty sure they don't, because they usually don't.
They usually don't.
Mm-mm. Yeah. So,
that's even more guaranteed to hit, I guess, at the end of the day.
Yeah,
that would be actually pretty crazy. So in Arena, Ratsma, I know we're going to get to it in a second, but obviously spells are going to be a lot more popular now. Is this card, well, okay, first off, was this card good before that change? And is it good after that change?
Oh, both. This card is so good. Like usually, you hear a lot of people complain about Flamestrike, but what Flamestrike really usually does is it clears like maybe like 8. If you get like 12 health removed, usually that's a great Flamestrike. This thing is not limited to people playing something big and something small, and usually 15 health. They can't put 15 health on the board with you having nothing.
Yeah,
it's nearly impossible. So this is a free board
clear. Minions too. Like,
yeah, exactly. But I mean, even if you don't trade your minions or if you don't have a board, they usually won't be able to put 15 health on the board. Is the case that I'm trying to make?
Yeah,
because it's such a back and forth game. No one's behind by an entire turn or a turn and a half. So 15 health with 10 mana is really hard to produce on a board with one turn.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's just so good. It's gonna be one of the best Shaman rares. I don't
rare like let too. It beat.
Yeah, a lot of the Shaman threats and even threats in Arena are that cost 5 or less. So you can play this, clear the board, and then develop your own threat. So it's so good.
Yeah. Developing your own threat too is, I think that's going to be a huge aspect to this too.
It's kind of like the new Abyssal.
Yeah. If I let you play absolutely. 4 minions in a row without doing anything, you still don't even have 15 power, like, or 15 toughness. Like,
yeah.
15
you're
is
still cleaning
time.
This up. Yeah.
That's true. That's
crazy.
That is pretty crazy. And for control of Shaman, that's just beautiful. Because
I mean, we're losing Healing Wave, though. Like, that's the one thing that sucks is, like, we're losing the best. Well, you know, I'm exaggerating maybe a bit, but one of the highest. Yeah, Genu with Water Speaker is great, but it's like, if I want to play Volcano, then that Genu just doesn't like mesh as well with the deck, the healing wave. So in a weird way, I feel like healing wave going away makes control shaman weaker, and then suddenly do you really want to play that deck? But on the flip side, we'll see what happens with elementals, because that might be a thing. There might be a deck that's like full of bulky elementals at the top end, and you can actually afford to play a control deck.
This card is unaffected by Volcano.
Is Helazeal still here after a reset?
That'd be so badass. I think it's in
Helazeal still here. I forget. Is Helazeal still here? Oh my god! Yeah,
I think it's in League. No, I thought it was in League.
I'm pretty sure it's Whispers.
Oh yeah, it's Whispers.
Oh,
you're
I think
right.
It was Whispers. Yeah, so it's still.
Oh man, it's around.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, Shaman's still good in every way. It's still still solid.
They clearly want to push the Shaman control archetype, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's
and it's good.
Great.
It's good. Can anybody not complain, please?
Yeah, I like control Shaman.
I'm sure some people just don't like the idea of Shaman getting yet another archetype. But if that's the dominant archetype of their class, I don't mind it. I think
it's always been solid. It was just never tier, you know, 1, 2, or 3. I think. Control Shaman, there was always tools
too for a while. I don't know, dude. It's really not that far behind.
Yeah, it's not that far off. It's always got the right tools. It's just it needed the other archetypes to weaken a bit before it could be viable. Okay, let's look at this next card, which brings up the Elemental Tribe, which they are trying to push this as part of Journey to Un'Goro. I think the Beast and the Elementals would be the two big ones. But the Elemental is the one that I didn't anticipate necessarily. So what they're doing with the Elemental is not only are they going to be adding cards that are Elementals, but they're also redesignating some of the older cards to be Elementals. So I think some of the examples were Alakir, I believe. Let me see. What were some of the others, if you guys remember? I think Ragnaros, right?
Oh, Ragnaros. Mm-hmm. All the Ragers are going to be changed.
Yeah, the Ragers are all changed.
The Unbound Elemental, Fireguard Destroyer, Fire Elemental, Frost Elemental. There's a bunch of them, dude. What Elemental is changing? Even Pyro's a little Phoenix from Mages is going to be that.
Yeah, yeah. So there's going to be a lot more Elementals, and that just means there's got to be synergistic Elemental cards coming too. But one of the ones that they showed us was Pyros, which is a Mage Legendary. And given that we're talking about legendaries just up front, they have said that each class will get two legendaries, one quest and one minion. So this one is the mage minion here that's legendary. And so this card, I believe, is a pretty, there's an exact parallel to this, possibly like in Magic or something, where it's a 2-mana Pyros, it's a 2/2 elemental death rattle, return this to your hand as a 6/6 that costs 6. And then I believe the 6/6 is basically the same thing that returns to your hand as a 10/10. So, you know, it's like a perpetual card that scales up, but doesn't scale up like Jade, which is like scaling up on the board. It actually scales up in your hand, so you have to spend the mana. Rasmus, what do you think about this in Arena first?
It's not bad. We've kind of moved into a meta where, you know, it's like answer or like question response meta. You know, you go back and forth. You're not really like building too much tempo on a board. You keep getting cleared and then you clear your opponent. So this gives you another thing to just throw on the board and it comes back, you know, it's just another thing you just throw on the board, try to waste their answers. So it's not bad in that sense. If it was like a common card, then it'd be much better, but it's probably the same power level as like Tomb Spider, which you can get another Tomb Spider and just keep doing that. But because tempo is such a fact, like such a big factor in Arena, this compared to other legendaries, things that cheat mana, it really doesn't compare with the best ones, but it's probably slightly above average.
Yeah, so better than Milhouse Mana Storm, worse than, you know, Antonitis or something.
There you go.
Definitely benefits from being in Mage, right? Like, I feel like that class works better with trading up with the hero power than most.
Oh, yeah, so the 2-2 and the 6-6 isn't as bad trading into, like, a River Croc or a Bolt of Fist.
Yeah.
But, It's just
still not that great. Yeah. But it'd be a lot worse in a class that doesn't have a hero power that lets you trade up stats on the board.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of bad legendaries in Arena, so this will probably be the right pick a good amount of the time, but probably not the best pick all the time.
Yeah. All right, so how is this in Standard? What do you guys think?
This made sense in the Arena world. I'm like, yeah, okay. maybe infinite value, like return with Nazoth. People have thought about that, but since Reno's going away, I don't think Kazakus Mage is going to be enough. I mean, we'll have to see. I just like the card. I just like the concept of the card. It's a card that can fit pretty much everywhere. You can build a value deck and get value from it. You can try to go for a more board centric deck that's not value oriented and still get, you know, some decent mileage out of it. So I still don't know what the perfect home for it is, but I get the weird vibe to get like a duplicate for elementals. And that could be a perfect fit. I'd love to see it like an Echo of Medivh for Allies or something.
Oh God.
With that card, I think funny. This would be fantastic.
Yeah. I was hoping that this kind of card would have made it into Hunter, actually, instead of Mage.
Oh God.
Okay. A class that just has trouble drawing cards. Like the draw mechanic, it was nerfed a long time ago and it just never returned to the class. And this type of card that continually gives you a card back, benefits it, or at least allows them to fill a gap, you know, that is there right now. Mage doesn't really have that an issue with drawing cards. They've got all kinds of cards that can draw, random cards or, you know, just intellect.
Yeah, well, the idea is that Mage could just play like less threats and they get to play more answers,
right?
Because this card has more value.
I see what you mean.
Hunter kind of wants to have like decent stats on the board, so like the 2/2 would be like more of a boon to them than it would be to Mage, for instance. But one thing that's interesting that you point out is that this card would have actually been pretty good, I think, in a hand buff class, like one of the classes that buffs cards in your hand. Like, so in Hunter, for instance, when it dies, it comes back. Like, I can play it on 2, and then it dies, and it comes back, and then I can, like, play one of those cards that buffs a beast in hand, for instance, which is, like, interesting, because then that means that as long as I have it, I always have a beast in my hand, so to speak, or like, at least I have it on the board.
Yeah,
so you always have something to buff
in your hand. It's consistency, right. I know what you mean.
Yeah, as far as how good it will be, to Noxious's point, I really hope that Kazakus Mage isn't the thing.
Yeah,
because if people complained about Reno decks before, if a deck is still good enough with just Kazakus,
I'll be tired of it, man.
It's gonna need to hinge a lot on the Kazakus potion, which is like I already think is like pretty OP. Like the 5-mana Kazakus potion is just so under-costed for what it accomplishes.
I know, right?
Compared to like playing a 3/3 on the board.
Do you ever play Kazakus in Arena, Retsma? Okay.
Yeah, you can have everyone.
Someone played on Shocky.
The 10 minute potion is pretty game winning because it's just like huge tempo and you just can't come back from that.
Yeah,
it's kind of
Shocky. Shocky posted the guy's deck list. He like went back and recorded and posted the guy's deck list in our Skype group, and he was like, "This guy played a wild deck in Arena and had Kazakus in it."
That's pretty sick. But you know, I didn't really think about the death rattle aspect of this, so this it could be interesting. If
I mean, I'll say something too. Like now that we're on the topic of death rattle, like if Reno Priest stays a thing because you know, new quest, blah blah blah. If that ends up staying around, right? If Reno Priest stays around, then like the Kazakus potion in that deck is just really good because you can resummon death rattles, trigger the quest faster, get Nazoth value. It's like, I feel like the Reno archetype or the Highlander one might still have a home, but maybe not in Mage and Warlock. Like, I really just don't want Mage and Warlock to be at it again. Like, I think the factions have, like, done their time. Like, I need the Jade faction and the Cabal faction to just phase out a bit and let other cards come in to do something else. Because I think the whole Kazakus meta is just, it's too much. It's just like, classes are revolving.
I hope that Kazakus is only viable in possibly one class. That's about it. I mean, I wouldn't even mind if it just wasn't viable at all. But if it's viable in something, just please just be one class. But yeah, so getting to your point about death rattle, I guess let's just skip this. Let's just talk about the quest and the death rattle since it kind of came up.
Sure.
So one of the things that was announced too was just the whole concept of quests, which are essentially going to be these spells. They're officially classified as spells. So they'll be in your hand when you play it. It's going to act as a spell. So people have been theorizing around Pyromancer and things like that. But once you play it, it shows up like a secret on your hero. But your opponent can actually see what it is too. And I thought that was really cool. I thought the fact that it's completely, you know, just a transparent thing is great actually for the game. But then they showed the priest one. And the priest one is just basically the quest is It's called Awaken the Makers. Summon 7 Death Rattle minions. Reward Amara, Warden of the Hope. And Amara is definitely a card very similar to something we've talked about either on the show through Mechatorps or maybe even last week. I think somebody
had it was last week, Mechatorps. Or something. And, I forget.
But. And we've discussed it many times. It's a 5-mana 8/8 legend. It's taunt, which is nice. But then Battlecry sets your health, hero's health, to 40, which is praise, hallelujah. Like I've been wanting like this type of change for a long time for priests, and being able to actually alter your hero's health is something that's gonna be, this is like a precedent for. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about this whole quest. What do you guys think of just the general quest mechanic being added? Noxious, I'll have you start off.
Well, personally, I like the idea of a quest. The thing is, basically, the way it works is you always have it in your opening hand, right? Like, that's the one first thing we need to remember. And so that means you can actually build a deck around it and not hope on a 50-50 basis that you're going to find it by turn 6. You know what I mean? Like, it's always going to be something you're going to build towards because the opponent knows what it is as soon as it comes down, and they know what exactly you're going to be doing. So I expect all the quests to be 1 mana. I haven't heard confirmation, but I expect them to be that way. And then you're going to be able to just build towards it throughout the game. Now, the thing about quests, though, is that if their reward is objectively too good, then it basically makes every single class play a quest deck. So you have to be cautious about, you know, how good that is, right? Like, you can't just make it so every single class wants to complete their quest because that's the best way for them to win. In the case of Priest, for instance, they reset their health to 40, but that doesn't mean they win the game. Like, it's a very, very good effect. It's fantastic. It's probably going to mean that they're able to extend the game into fatigue at that stage if they've been able to play 7 death rattles, but it doesn't mean they've won the game. So it depends what the other classes have. As far as whether or not this quest fits Priest, it'll come down, I think, to whether or not Onyx Bishop is viable in those types of decks. And I almost get a feeling that Death Rattle Priest is not going to be as good as a like Kazakus-ish approach to it, which I don't know if you have enough death rattles to do it, but I'm just getting that weird vibe when I look at the card.
I was looking at the death rattle list last night with, I think, thank goodness that Whispers of the Old Gods is still.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Oh, my God. Whispers of the Old Gods was gone. We'd have literally no viable death rattles. So we still have a decent set, but I wouldn't say that they're, any of them are particularly powerful. You know, they're all just like solid cost, and they're probably better in Arena, to be honest, like just from a relative standpoint than they are in Standard.
I mean, 7 death rattles. That's a lot of death rattles.
I know. Rattles. So they got to add a bunch. I'm expecting there to be a bunch of new ones coming out.
So maybe that's the way you do it, right? You just go, like, you play Blood Mage Thanos, Loot Hoarders, Harvest Golem, Infested Torrent, Shifting Shade Shenanigans, Onyx Bishop, of course, to resurrect them. And then your Kazakus Potion, you just resurrect random stuff. So you just bring back death rattles, and that triggers the quest, like, so quick. So you're almost guaranteed summon, to get the full health.
Sounds like a lot of setup.
It is a summon effect.
It definitely is a lot of setup. And
I don't know if this could be a replacement for Reno. I mean, you still have to draw to the quest, right?
It's in your starting hand. Always.
You have to use the mana, though.
And the card gets added to your hand when you complete the reward.
I see.
Yeah. So
it's still probably a bit slower than Reno, right? You still got to play the 5-mana card at the end and all those death rattles.
It's definitely slower than Reno.
It's slower, but more consistent. I see.
Yeah, I think the quest mechanic is basically terrifying. I'm not sure actually how fun it is. And I think that this quest in particular is already like pretty discouraging, personally. I think that, like you said, you get to see that your opponent's on the quest. Like, does that... Well, A, first off, there's only one quest in each class, so obviously I know what my opponent's quest is. So does it really matter if they show me?
Well, I think it shows you progress too.
I know.
Yeah, but, you know where they were at.
It's like you would have known what it was anyways. But anyways, the thing that gets me about this quest in particular is that it's just play 7 death rattles.
Yeah,
like there's no counterplay. Like it's not like it's 6 death rattles go off and all of a sudden I can run silence or I can like, you know, like, oh, they're about to complete their quest, so I steal their minion with Sylvanas or something. Like it's just play 7. So, like, I hope the other quests are more, like, I can actually spar with my opponent and getting them not to complete their quest, because I think that allowing counterplay to the quest kind of puts us in a scenario where we're doing the same thing that people just complained about for the last 3 months, only in a different way, which is that you give them one powerful card that is able to make the rest of their cards viable in the deck, and the whole deck is geared and built. It builds itself. you know, like Noxious said, if every class has to play a quest, then the decks all just build themselves, and everyone just got done complaining about how they felt like Blizzard's been making them build specific decks. And like, so I don't know, this quest in particular, I can't see it going well. This like, it's like one of those scenarios. People say this all the time, but it's either really like good or just really bad. And I don't see any like middle ground. Like, I feel like it's particularly difficult to balance a quest just for starters.
So I think I'm definitely in the same boat or same bucket as you with it. And I don't think the quest mechanic is terrifying, actually. I think the quest mechanic is actually great. But it really depends on how you use it. And with this first one, this is exactly what I didn't want them to, like, I don't want them to use it this way, which is basically, like you said, just build a deck. It's like simple, you know, just throw death rattles in it. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're set up to perform this quest. There's no counterplay. There's no way of your opponent trying to prevent you from even getting there. So having the death rattle trigger would have even just been a better step towards you know, making this good. But I just want to get away from the quest even almost requiring you to build a deck a certain way, at least tribally, you know, like with the same categories. The last thing I want to see is druids get elementals or beasts, you know.
Oh, they're getting beasts, dude. I'm telling you right now, they are playing beasts.
I mean, I don't want the quest to be involved like those type of cards. Like, I want the quest to be gameplay oriented, like something that involves, you know, interaction with your opponent and having some counter on those actual scenarios. Yeah. I think that would actually be a lot more interesting. And right now it's just like, if it's all just like build your deck this way, and then it's just like, I'm just building a jade deck. I'm just throwing jade stuff in my deck, and it's like easy.
There's a lot more left to see too. Like, are they all going to be one mana? Like, they're giving you the option if you want to mulligan or not, but if your deck's designed to complete the quest, then why would I ever mulligan it for one mana? It's not like I'm going to need cards to go up against aggro, regardless if my deck's designed to do my quest. Like, I'm still going to want the quest in my opening hand. I don't know. It gives you an extra card, not extra in addition, but it gives you like an extra card for Pyromancer, like you said, but I don't know how relevant that really is.
Yeah. In Arena, Ratsma,
playable? How does even work in Arena? Like, how do they even work in Arena? Are you going to draft them? Like, that seems pretty bad.
I don't know if Cthune and a lot of Cthune cards, right, with the Cthune buff effects, is they just remove Cthune entirely from the arena, so you can't get them offered. They may do something similar to that. I could definitely see that, because it is very hard to get a certain theme going in arena. Like, even this one seems simple enough, but with Naxx gone, especially, a lot of death rattles are bad. And I'm just going to talk about priests in specific. Even Dark Cultist is gone. Like, what do you have now? You have Infested Tauren, Wallbring Runts. They're not very good cards.
There's no way that they let you draft these. I don't think these are going to be draftable in Arena. I'd be shocked if they found a way to incorporate it.
Well,
I hope they will be. It'll be a lot of fun trying to chase that, but, you know.
If they let you draft it, and then they based on if you drafted this or not, it changes, like, pick percent or offer percentages of death rattle for you.
The technology is not there, Shane. Come on.
I mean, also, it depends on what the other quests, how the other quests are designed, right? If it's all this one or not.
Exactly. If it's like a mage quest that like costs 3 mana, but then if you use 5 spells, you get like, I don't know, a 5/5 Thalnos for 5 or something. That's what I want to see, though. I don't want to see. It's kind of interesting because I don't really want to see quests where it's like, oh, I'm going to build Death Rattles and get Amara, and then I'm going to set myself to 40, which I think actually this card's insane. Like, I think setting yourself to 40 health is a lot better than maybe Noxious gave it credit. But
I think it's fantastic, but I don't know if it's like. The thing about those quests is that they're so. The effects are so crazy that they're like. Like, huge swings, I mean, I'm kind of tired of, unless they're back and forth and eventually ends. And, like, I remember designing that mechanic for an episode of, like, Custom Card Creation about a year and a half ago. And my idea of a quest was that you had, like, random minions with quests on them. Like, 2-mana, 3/2 for hunters that read, you know, do something. Like, kill a minion with a weapon, and at the end of your turn, draw a card. So if you had a weapon equipped, you played it, you kill something, quest complete, draw a card. So you would have, like, small incremental quests as opposed to one big deck building.
That's pretty much like the Enrage and Acolyte of Pain mechanic in, like, Wild Pyro. They're like, those are just effects and triggers.
Kind of quest, right? Like, right. Yeah. Kind of
adaptive
a quest
quests
as well. I would have liked to see quests that don't give you huge swing cards that are just like easier to complete. Like, just like something like, I don't know, this is just off the top of my head, but like, it could be like a 2-mana or a 1-mana mage secret, or I mean, quest that says like, play like 4 spells by turn 8 and get 2 blood mages added to your hand or something. I don't know. Just like something that's just like,
yeah, it's nice. Like, it's incremental. It's not like,
yeah, something that
game
like,
ending
type
of thing.
It gives you cards that are beneficial, but it doesn't give you a card that wins the game. Like something that doesn't isn't a detriment to the rest of your deck so heavily that like, if you don't reach the quest, you're probably just losing.
Yeah.
Emote greetings at 12 health.
Dude, how awesome.
I mean, I want to see,
emote quests. Can you emote thank you or well played like 5 times before your opponent squelches you or something stupid like that? That would be helpful.
This could be an achievement, though.
That would be an achievement, yeah.
Achievements. It's a good idea, Noxious. Until Blizzard about that one.
Never.
Well, so anyways, I'm very curious to see what the other classes are, but it's very curious that they showed this one first. I think they showed this one first mostly for Amara, because Amara is so impressive. But quest-wise, I'm hoping this is not one of the better quests, because that will be concerning.
Okay, here we go. Dude, they're removing Ragnaros from Standard, but they're slapping it onto the Shaman quest. I'm calling it, dude. If you summon, like, 7 elementals, this summons
get
Ragnaros
back
the Fire
into
Lord.
Yeah. Back in the oh man, there'd be people raging after that. Okay, well, let's talk about the other new mechanic that they introduced, which was Adapt. And in introducing Adapt, they showed a Druid card. And to explain Adapt is basically, in this particular case, it's a battle cry. And what you get to do with this Verdant Longneck, which is a 5-mana, 5/4 beast, is you get to choose, you basically discover 3 attribute or 3 buffs out of 10 that are possible, and in this case you get to adapt this card, so you get to place whatever buff that you choose onto this card. So they listed out 6, they showed 6 in the video, but we know all 10 of them. So just to list them out, they are Death Rattle, summon 2/1/1 plants, +3 attack, can't be targeted by spells or hero powers, Divine Shield, Wind Fury, Taunt. And the other 4 are, let me bring them up real quick. The other 4 are Volcanic Might, +1/+1, Rocky Carapace, +3 health, Stealth until your next turn, and then the last one is Destroy any minion damaged by this one, which is poisonous. It basically makes it poisonous. So pretty powerful ones. I mean, some of them kind of, you figured it would be like +3 attack, but there are a couple that kind of surprised me that they added. But generally speaking, at least with the example that they're giving here and maybe what we've heard, what do you guys think of Adapt? Ratsman, you want to start?
I mean, I don't even think this is a new mechanic. It's like, it's a mix between like discover and choose one.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you don't get the card. That's why it's more like choose one and it's activated immediately. Like in Arena, I do think it will end up being a good card, because what you tend to see as we get more expansions, the discover mechanic becomes more powerful. Than just a solid spider tank, right? Cabal Courier is so much more powerful because you get options, and options tend to win games in Arena now. So I think the Adapt cards will be strong, but I mean, it's not like a crazy new mechanic. It's not that exciting.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, it all depends on how they do it. Honestly, like they actually, for some reason, I thought Adapt was going to let me pick 2 for some reason, but. Regardless,
oh my god!
Yeah,
that'd
I thought they were ridiculous.
Yeah, because the 5-mana 5/4 was so bad that it had to be 2, right?
Yeah. I mean, basically. First off, I would say that 10 choices is too many. Like we already just made. I feel like they already just made a mistake. Like 10 choices gives like too much of a range. Like before, if you make a smaller amount of choices, let's say, Adapt gets like more interesting. Because first off, I like the mechanic, but I think it could be like even better if you had maybe less options. Like let's say I have this dinosaur in my hand, and I don't need a taunt yet. Maybe I can afford to play like an Azure Drake and draw. Obviously, Azure Drake's going to be gone, but I want the taunt for later instead of like maybe a long neck with Divine Shield on it now, and it kind of forces a decision where it's like, well, this long neck can be a defensive tool later when I need it better. So I'm going to wait. But when you only get to pick one out of three out of 10, I feel like there's less reliability there. So then it's going to end up being more like, let me just play this card on curve and choose the best option for the situation that I'm currently in.
Right.
Since it's unreliable that you get a specific one. I don't know.
So the thing I agree with those. I agree, you know, to obviously both you and Ratsma on the things that you've said. I think the thing that I'm a little bit worried about with Adapt is the different ways that Adapt is going to be used on these cards. So this one's very straightforward. This one is, okay, you're going to adapt this card whenever it's played. So I think it's pretty clear as to evaluating what type of value that you're going to have while playing this card, or even your opponent has the card, how, you know, what he's going to end up with. There's a range that you can kind of like derive in your head. Now, what's a little bit scary is if it says something like Battlecry, adapt all the Murlocs on the board, or adapt all the beasts on the board.
+3 attack to everything. Seems good.
No, then all of a sudden it's like enhance home mechanic, you know, like crazy.
No, it's not random, though. I mean, it's +3 attack. You get to pick what you want, though.
I know, but if you pick
I'll say one thing, though, is that if you look at the options we're given, on average, I'd say there's like 3 very aggressive ones, 3 that are more defensive, and 4 that are like pretty versatile and that fit every role. So even though the range is not specifically, you know, Wind Fury, 3 attack, you know, I don't know exactly what he's getting. Like, can I BGH that adapt minion consistently? Which is a very extreme example. But, you know, even though that's not something you can guarantee that's going to happen, and you're not going to start taking Blood Knight to be Divine Shield, overall, you can still assume that if he's in a position of, you know, being aggressive, he's going to pick one of these three. And it's likely he finds one of the three because of the way that you get 3 out of 10. So you can usually make an assumption as to what type of things he's going to go for the adapt and what type of effect you can get on average.
Yeah,
issue is that the average doesn't hit, it's fucking atrocious.
Defensive, there's like defensive, not be defensive or aggressive, yeah. Or like neutral are like pretty different terms, I'd say. Like you say, like there's 3 defensive options, but I mean, like, are there really? Like the really only defensive option in the game is taunt, honestly. Like,
I mean, poison spit is pretty. Is
I mean, I think poison spit is definitely a defensive one.
On like a small minion, maybe, but not like on a 5/4 or 5.
Yeah, sure.
But like, look at some of the like the choices. Like, can't be targeted by spells or hero powers. Like, that's pretty good when you want to have it. Like, Spectral Knight was a good card for a while because there were a bunch of mages, and like the summon 2/1/1 plants, that makes this card just like insane. Like in Arena, for instance, if you adapt into a summon 2/1/1 plants, like that's nuts. And like Divine Shield's also like you pick Divine Shield because actually it's pretty good. Divine Shield's pretty good in general, but you only pick it like in situations where you want it. Divine Shield gets so much better if it's an option where it's like, oh, they have 1/1s or they have a ping, so I'm just not going to take Divine Shield in this matchup.
Yeah,
that's definitely true in Arena. Like all the classes are so defined that, you know, you get cannot be targeted against mage or priest, and you have board control, or you know pick Wind Fury against Warlock. It's going to be really strong.
This is crazy.
In Arena, for sure, but I don't know about Standard necessarily. I don't think the card, even with the best possible outcome in Standard, unless Beast Synergy is pushed, is ever making the cut. Unless I'm completely blanking.
I mean, if you push it down to 6 options, if you push it down to 6 options and like you kept some of the better ones, the card would definitely see play.
Yeah, for sure. A 10, I think.
It won't be consistent. I give you guys that. But there are, I mean, I don't know what the math is on the probability of getting, just say, aggressive adaptations. But if we end up going that route and we just go with very zoo-like, Murloc-like, just aggressive tribal type of decks, then this thing turns into potentially Bloodlust if Adapt is going to be used that way. You know,
I mean,
if it's Adapt.
Maelstrom Portal, though, like, I love the pipe dream of Murlocs being a thing, but unless they show me a Murloc that buffs the health of all their Murlocs, I assume they're not living past turn 3.
I mean, Finja's like, maybe the best card in the game, literally.
But does Finja make you want to play Big Gentle Dinosaur?
I don't think that it does make you. Well, I was arguing with someone last night, and I don't think that when Finja connects, you probably already have legitimately like a 70% win rate.
Exactly.
So you don't even need to buff the Murlocs, and you never played on curve because Murlocs on curve aren't good. Yeah. But and that's where you get into a tricky position where all of a sudden already in my mind I'm sculpting this deck where I don't really want to play Big Gentle Dinosaur because when Fyndra connects I'm already winning. Then it's like, well, if I play on curve and my Murlocs live, and then I play Big Gentle Dinosaur, now apparently I'm just winning the game also outright. I don't know. It's the Murloc one is like really tricky to me. I guess you can play Shaman and call in the finishers and then adapt all of those and stuff.
I mean, there's definitely some scenario. I mean, I just feel like the top end of this thing is scary. It potentially is scary.
Especially with Sea Devil Stinger and Warlock. Like, that guy's just a good card.
Yeah,
like,
dude. That one scares me. That's the only one that I'm actually legitimately worried about with the Murloc synergy. I was going to bring it up later because that, like, I've actually experimented with some Murloc Zoo and it's horrible because it's just not a thing right now. But if we get, it's not enough, I think.
I mean, post-patch, like yesterday, for instance, or like, I don't know, I'm in a lot of like groups with like better players and then like in Discord and stuff. And there's definitely some Zoo lists going around. People played it in top 100 to have Murlocs in it.
That's amazing. I want to see this.
It's good. Fyndra
is just an insanely good card.
Purple's been like preaching this for months and months now. And so it's so funny that it's finally starting to hit into mainstream.
What is that, Fyndra?
The Fyndra package, yeah.
Everybody tried it out when, like, nobody said the package was, I've never heard anybody say the package was weak. And if they did, I or definitely viable, corrected like, them. Just
even yeah, people would ask me.
Yeah, like, it's very, very DE, good,
yeah.
dude.
Yeah, people would be like, good. Oh, should I DE Fyndra? And I'd be like, look, man, if it's not good now, it'll be
yeah,
good.
Yeah, it will be good.
Eventually, yeah. because yeah. that card insane. Is a very high power level, yeah.
Dude, the Death Rattle summon 1/1, can you imagine? I mean, that's like Soul of the Forest, like a mini Soul of the Forest and all these. And if you combo that with, I don't know, just even like Bloodlust for Shaman or something like that, it could be crazy. I'm just seeing scenarios where this could be crazy given.
Or your three choices could be like Wind Fury Taunt and something else that's garbage.
Of course. So it's the consistent.
The Poison Spit on a 5/4.
The inconsistency also is the only thing that keeps it in.
Yeah. It would adapt for all, right? It wouldn't like let you choose because that'd be insane as well.
Yeah. Well, that would take forever to kind of go through too, one by one. But intriguing for sure. I'm just nervous. I'm just really nervous that the power is going to be too high on that one. Okay. Let's see the next thing. Let's see what else did they announce here. I don't know if was there any other new cards that they actually talked about. Let me see if I missed anything.
Well, you brought up the Murloc one indirectly, but yeah.
Yeah, let me show that.
Yeah,
one
the gentle
Megasaur. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of weird that they revealed it now and then, like, they're not revealing another card for 16 days. Also, they said that they wanted to make it. Last year, they said they wanted to do it before championships to spice up championships. And then I guess they've decided against that.
Thank goodness. that would have been crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't prefer it, but I really don't appreciate, like, them saying that that's probably going to happen and then it not happening. I think yesterday, the only reason they patched yesterday is because they said it would be late February when it didn't make any sense.
The 28th of February.
Yeah. which I don't even want to get into the competitive ramifications that had in the ladder, but
yeah.
This
one's actually an epic too. So I don't know. Maybe you guys would see it a little bit more.
I think it was leaked though. From my understanding, that was leaked so hard it wasn't even funny. I don't think that was intended to be shown to anyone. That specific dinosaur. So, the rest were definitely like from Blizzard, but that one wasn't.
Are we gonna? Is this gonna be your typical community drip feed type of thing where everybody gets
one?
Do you
maybe
guys
not the community
like,
one.
Have any of you guys? I actually don't know, and I've been like wondering and asking to see if we could get a card. But
so I want them to go. You know what? Screw this, and just randomly mid March they go. All right, boys. Pack your bags. We're going to N'Goro. Unleash all the cards. 2 days later, we get like. I just want them to surprise me.
I wouldn't mind. Yeah,
but they said it was going to be early April. I don't want the timeline to be real because a month and a half just seems like dreadfully far away.
It's funny because I only got to play one tournament in the last meta, and now I'm going to play like three tournaments in this meta, even though it's 1/3 the time.
yeah.
which is, like for me, it just doesn't make any sense. Yeah. I don't really like the whole like take 3 weeks and keep revealing cards and stuff. Like,
I think it was fine the first time around. I mean, it was a nice gesture to the community when everybody got a card, and you know, just kind of give everybody the spotlight for the day. And so, I mean, that was kind of cool. But I think at this point, it's, you know, it's not that, like, I think the community would rather just kind of get it all at once and get it quick, like, soon after.
Well, here's how I look at it. Like, style. Magic the Gathering didn't give people, like, card releases, and then Hearthstone did it, and now Magic does do it. So I think it's probably an effective marketing or hype
tool. Oh, of course it is, for, like, weeks and weeks.
Like, yeah, but I think it's, like, maybe a little overplayed, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. One minor thing too is that they added the poisonous syntax to all the cards, like Cobra and Assassin, like all the cards where if you do damage, you destroy, you know, the card that you do damage to. So yeah, a new term that's going to be used. I think it's smart. I think a lot of people agree with that change and have probably been asking for it for a while, just so we don't have all these words on the cards that aren't really necessary. So hopefully in the future they'll continue to do that. Just create, you know, more Hearthstone terms that we can use. The last bit, I think more reveals in March 17th. There's going to be 5 neutral legends, and yeah, I think that's about it. So I think
it's interesting that they like only have the 5 neutral legends, and they're doing like 2 legendaries for each class. But I mean, like one of them
is a quest. So.
A quest, and they already revealed the mage one. So.
I was hoping there'd be more. I was hoping there'd be like 3 legendaries per class or something like that, but I don't know, that wouldn't be good for Razzma in the arena, folks. You wouldn't see them quite as much.
Oh man, I would love it though.
I'm just saying legendaries, just class legendaries. Oh,
they are more common now.
Yeah, they are, that's true.
Yep.
Which we're gonna talk about in a second, but why don't we move on? And before we move on, I do want to give a shout out just to the folks on iTunes as well as our patrons for supporting the show. If you listen to the show on iTunes or Google Podcasts or SoundCloud, you just like to listen to the audio version, you can find them there shortly after each of the show. I usually get them up by the end of the night, but if you want to help out the show, you can leave a rating or a 5-star review, and that really helps out in a big way for folks to find Value Town when they're searching for Hearthstone podcasts. So I want to give a shout out to Dustin Payton, who's our latest person that has left a 5-star review. Thank you so much, man. And then, of course, Value Town is 100% funded by our Patreon at patreon.com/valuetown, which you can see in the bottom right corner there. And we have all these great folks that are supporting us right now, and they're amazing. So always want to take some time to give them a shout out. Got some big legendary producers, Mike T and Dean P, of course. And then we have a new one, Eric Endel, that has joined into the legendary producer ranks. So thank you so much, Eric, for being joining in, as well as a few of the others, Devin W, David H, Seb S, 2 Comic Kid, Daniel, Dr. Daniel F, Andrew R, Zach M, and Enoch K. And there was a moment that we actually dropped below this milestone, but then, you know, Eric came in and saved us, and we still have the Smilestone, baby. So, you know what?
We're sorry. We apologize.
Actually, Razzma, do you know about this? Oh, Razzma doesn't even know about this.
What?
I didn't tell him.
What are you talking about?
All right, this is where we have to give our best smile for 20 seconds because it's called Smilestone. All right, here we go. Starting now. You can talk too. Make sure you just smile the entire time.
You got noxious. You got noxious, baby, in the background.
Oh, we're really doing this for 20 seconds.
You're
doing.
Huh? You're ruining it. Okay, that was 20 seconds. Good job, guys. Good job. Good job on that. Man, thanks
so
much.
They call it Cringestone somewhere.
There's definitely like this group of people that are just like, oh my god, so cringe, but they love it. And then there's other people that just absolutely love Smilestone. So.
You look like losers. You gotta stop this. It's like, well, enjoy it right now.
That's right, man. Just, we all need a little Smilestone, you know, an Hearthstone.
New ad.
Yeah, right. Thanks to the patrons for, you know, again, enabling that milestone, and hopefully it continues. Let's talk about the patch that released yesterday, and this patch is the one that had a lot of goodies in it. The nerfs that we've been talking about for a while now. This isn't the right one. Yeah, so anyways, the nerfs to Spirit Claws and Small Time Buccaneer as well as the floors, the rank floors at 5, 10, and 15, and all the arena changes too that we have been discussing. So, hey, actually, here it is. So, actually, the rank floor goes all the way down to 20. I didn't actually realize that. Yeah. I thought it was just 5, 10, 15. Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit. I know it's only been like one day, and we'll dive into the arena one in just a second, but I just want to kind of get your thoughts just generally. How you guys feel about the patch after just one day of playing on the ladder, arena, whatever? Rasma, any thoughts?
Change is good.
Can you tell? Like, could you actually tell?
Yeah, oh, my God.
Oh, okay. Okay.
In arena, you could definitely tell.
Okay, yeah. Good.
I mean, as a streamer, since I play for a living, I do... You know, the meta gets stale. Everything, you know, becomes like the same as yesterday, and it gets a little bit boring. As to whether the change is really good or bad, I'm not quite sure yet. But it is fun diving into a new meta with, you know, different cards and different everything. So I mean, that's a nice positive to have there. But yeah. You can definitely tell. Yeah,
okay. Good. That's definitely
that. Pretty much as to whether it's good or bad, it doesn't matter.
We can't tell, at least for another couple of weeks or so, whether it's good or bad. Have you guys been seeing less aggro shaman and aggro warrior?
I mean, for arena, I imagine it's just like it's just a welcome to change, honestly. Like I just can't see how I don't play arena personally, but it just seems like an overall just good change. Like
I think a lot of people that are like more tryhardy and they want to like average the highest wins or whatever, they like the change. They think it'll be bring on a more higher skill cap arena. Yeah. For people that play it for more fun, they kind of like dislike the fact that they're not going to see a lot of their favorite cards anymore. So it's all a mindset. But what I've realized with Hearthstone is that they can do whatever they want, and people will keep coming back and playing it anyways. So
yeah,
you know.
I mean, the casual folks,
games in general.
I figured the casual folks wouldn't even notice, like, because they just don't play enough to
the
even
most
notice.
Casual like, folk won't notice. Like, my wife would not notice if she logged into Arena today and she just ran into new cards. But like, I guess I haven't found Zombie Chow in a decade. It's like, that happens.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that's generally a good thing. I got a chance to play just a little bit, and I can say that, like, out of my first... I think first 8 or 9 games, I haven't played any Shaman yet. I played Warlock, I think, 7 out of the 9 times so far. Like my first
Are you talking games. About Arena or Standard?
On Ladder, just on Ladder.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I haven't actually played Shaman quite yet. I don't think I've hit that group of people that are either just Legend players going all the way up or whatever that little range is where people start playing the aggressive decks again. But
Well, as far as like ranked goes... like for the patch, I guess I can like touch on the competitive ramifications.
Yeah, go ahead.
Like on EU, they released the patch, and Blizzard has it set up that just naturally the mobile patch doesn't come out at the same exact time as the client patch, which then they have it split so that if you play on the phone, you only play against people that are also playing on the phone, and if you play on the computer, you only play against people on the computer. And I think you can even choose not to patch your game and still log in on the computer. And for instance, like Hoy tweeted a Shaman deck with Doomsayers, and he was like, made top 25 with this on EU. And he was choosing to play on the old patch, which is a huge advantage because the people who don't patch their game are probably less skillful, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know. I could probably like figure out the words to like explain it properly.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, they're not keeping up to date with things. Yeah, they're just not as.
Yeah, like there's factors that, like plenty of factors lead to that. So then he was able to only get paired against people who also were playing on that patch, which I don't even know how close his matchups were, like on the ladder, or like, I don't know. So that was definitely pretty weird because it all went down the last day.
I mean, he has to update at some point, right? I mean, it'd be pretty terrible.
Oh, no. Yeah. Now for NA, we couldn't do that. Like we all had to play on the new patch.
Okay. So eventually even in EU... He has to.
Yeah,
there was just a little window. There's a window where he was just like abusing that.
Where he was able to do that, which is like not what you want. But Blizzard was kind of forced into releasing it yesterday because they promised it.
Okay.
Which is like a little whatever. But yeah, as far as the nerf goes, people complain about the pirate package. Well, it's safe to say Buccaneer is gone. Pirate Warrior, though, was very plentiful yesterday on the ladder. A lot of people played it in top 100. The deck's still insanely good. Yeah. Buccaneer was actually more of like a detriment to that deck's power level in the way that Rogue or Shaman could play it against them. Yeah. Also, Spirit Claws is gone, so that's another good card against Pirates. So now, like, the Pirate Warrior deck is – it's not – over its overall power level isn't higher, but its power level compared to the rest of the meta is actually higher than it was previously. But because of the way that it can only go face still, pretty much, the other decks are going to be able to eventually tech to have like just defensive options. Where like before, it's hard to just have defensive options because they don't work necessarily against Shaman as well. Because Shaman can also play a value game. But yeah, there was a lot of people trying out new decks. Aggro Shaman was pretty much gone, except for a few people. I don't think it'll completely disappear, though. I think you'll see it back. But I think mid-range Shaman will definitely probably be the dominant Shaman deck.
Yeah, not surprising.
Moving forward.
That's right. I heard people were playing like Corsairs and things like that in their Warriors instead of the small-time Buccaneers. I was just like, okay.
They'll remove one durability from your weapon. Yeah, that's how bad it was. That's what we needed to do to beat the other Pirate Warriors.
Yeah, that's really funny. I think one thing else to notice, or that I noticed here, was like there's a little Android update here with we optimized the Android distribution, allowing for smaller install sizes and smoother patching in the future. So that's... I'm not sure if that was the client thing that they were mentioning before. I'm
pretty sure that might be it. Yeah, when they said, you know, when we want to deploy patches and changes to cards, then we need to have the infrastructure adjusted so that we can actually change faster. It sounds silly, but like they can't come outright and say, we're not changing cards right now because the infrastructure is just not in place.
Well, of course.
Like it sounds bad, right? But the truth of it is like that might have been a legit technical hurdle, because as soon as you ask somebody to download like over 100 megabytes of data for something on mobile phone, you're already losing like a huge chunk of your downloaders. And then if you increase it even further, it gets more ridiculous. So
yeah, and then
there's actually been an issue.
It's the only reason I question it is because it's only Android. It's not actually iOS at all. So
it's a different distribution, though, right?
Yeah, it is, but I was thinking that comment he made before would be just across the board, you know, just a design change to the entire client, whatever platform it was. So I'm not 100% convinced that is actually it, but if it is, that'd be great. You know, that'd be wonderful that if they can patch it like a lot, patch it from the server based instead of updating. It's gonna be hard to update anyways. Like having all your clients be like different versions, there's always like a good week or sometimes even 3 weeks before the majority of your users actually have the latest update. So I just wanted to point that out because it was a little curious as to what that was.
How big was your patch on Android? That's the question. I haven't even looked.
I haven't
downloaded it, but if I tried it out, I'd be curious to know.
Yeah. Okay, well let's talk about the arena changes since
they had some bug fixes. That's always good. They missed one.
Oh, yeah, which one?
They missed. If you mulch and your opponent gets Sea Reaver, you can see it.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
No,
oh,
I don't know how they haven't fixed that yet.
I remember that.
It's still around. That. Yeah, they haven't fixed it. I was looking for it in this bug fix.
Blizzard spaghetti. It's just, I don't know. I don't know, man. Sometimes.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the arena
what a
changes.
Weird code.
And implications of them, and we've been alluding to some of them, but the biggest thing is just the standard change, right? Just going from wild to standard. What's your thoughts on that, and pros and cons?
Man, like I said, a lot of more try-hard players really like the change because it was a little bit more random what your deck would turn out to be. There was a lot more variance in what kind of cards you'd be offered and the strength level of those cards. Me, myself, personally, I love all the cards, playing a lot of them. So I'm definitely was not in favor of it. I think it's fine, though. Like I said, change is good. I think, like, the bigger violation of just, like, Arena in general as being, like, more of a wild mode is, you know, just changing the offering rate for specific cards. So what they've done is, you know, they cut the offering rate for Flamestrike and Abyssal in half. And that's nowhere on the client. So you would assume as a new player or someone who doesn't know about that, that you would get offered that spell, Flame Strike, at the same rate you get offered something like Fireball. And I think once we set a precedence for doing that for specific cards, the rules of Arena become more and more muddied up. And that's just, I think that's ugly.
I have to agree with you, man, because if I think about, you know, playing around Flame Strike, suddenly why? You know, like if you know that you have to choose between Fireball and Flame Strike, these are two very different examples because it's, you know, not that likely you'll have to play around either or. But the difference is actually massive in terms of how likely you're going to run into one or the other. So I think it's not meant to be taken like a literal draft mode, like in the way you think about Magic, where everything's equally likely to be represented. But if you can't know for sure, like there's no info on the client anywhere. So I don't know how to, you're supposed to expect your players to have to make the correct guess.
I mean, I just don't understand why they made Flamestrike cut in half. The more powerful card and card that probably wins more is Firelands Portal. So why single out Flamestrike? You know, it's different from Abyssal. It's not like they're both spells. One's a minion, one's a spell. They both kind of have AoE. So I just don't understand how they're choosing these cards to single out and nerf. If it's because of the community complaining on cards, are we now playing a game where the community chooses what cards don't show up in Arena?
We've been playing that game for a while in Standard.
I don't like it. You guys can keep that.
Thank you.
I don't know.
Thank you.
Yeah, like, it's interesting. Blizzard definitely needs to find ways. Well, an argument to this is that casual players actually, it doesn't matter to them that Flame Strike's at half. I don't know if that's an argument they use, but it's an argument you can use. But Blizzard definitely needs to find a way to make, when they make a change, it needs to become transparent. Like this month, they changed the how the ladder system works, the MMR, the matchups and stuff. So the it's less about getting like a 65% win rate or 67% win rate. And kind of, I described it before as like, I would bash my head against the wall better than like someone else was bashing their head against the wall. Like we were just beating players who necessarily weren't like as good. And it was whoever could beat them quicker, faster, you know,
higher volumes.
Where now it's more about having a consistent win rate over a number of games, like a 58% over like, you know, 200 games, where like that wouldn't have got you anywhere near top legend before. Now it does, because you move up and then it normalizes, and it's more about that. But they didn't even tell anybody.
What happened?
And then asked Ixar about it on Twitter, and he's like, I don't think so. And then he like comes back the next day and he's like, yeah, we just did that behind the scenes and no one knew.
Yeah, just to clarify on what he's talking about, this is ladder. The MMR, just the matchmaking system, which used to, I'm not sure exactly what the algorithm is, but the result of the algorithm used to match up like, you know, people possibly in the top 100 against somebody that's like 500 or 600 or 700 sometimes. So
they just tighten the range.
Yeah, they tighten the range by a lot. So I think the range is somewhere in 100, maybe 150. So the swings, you know, of points that you get if you're, you know, in the dumpster and trying to get up is much smaller. You know, it's like very, very hard actually to get out of the dumpster without actually playing a ton of games to get out of there. At the same time, it's a little bit harder to actually drop, you know, in big ways too. So it's much better for the folks. I think in the end, I think everybody agrees that this was a better change, or this change is good. It's just, nobody knew about it until like all the players were basically, hey, are you noticing this? Yeah, I'm noticing this too. It's like, oh, there must be something. And then, they did message Ixar, and Ixar didn't really tell anybody until like the day after. So,
well, he didn't even know. So,
He wasn't even aware at that point.
That was the biggest thing. He didn't know. So, he was actually looking into it. And then,
just to go back to Rasmus' point, is that they need to find a way to make these types of changes transparent.
I think it's
to the community.
It's a bigger issue, though, with the one thing that Rasmus is talking about, though, because balancing based on percentages, you know, like appearance percentages, is something that will never be transparent. Like, I don't know how you would even do that. You know, like when you're showing a card, you show,
at
this
point, you probably should just take it out of the
arena. Yeah, it should either be removed. Like, balance should either be just, it either remove a card or you keep the card or you balance, you know.
But even then, like, let's assume I'm in Arena that Priest plays Eerie Statue, God fucking forbid. Do I play around Purify? Like, you're gonna say no, right? You're gonna say no by default. But somebody who's got no clue that Blizzard decided to remove it.
They're probably not thinking about Purify.
Yeah.
That's their argument and yeah. in this case. Yeah. But
I mean, I humility a minion. I'm not even going to go Eerie Statue. I humility a minion. Do I play around Purify?
So are you saying because it's okay?
Because humility is a very different case than like Eerie Statue coming down, because that's just kind of a weird one. But humility is something, it's very realistic.
I just don't like the idea of cards existing in the game and not being available in general, honestly.
Precisely.
And this is the thing. I think that the standard change, I can understand why you don't like Eratsuma, but I think in theory it should allow them to better actively work on Arena if they right? Like,
yeah, it's more organized.
Like right now it's like, okay, well, I don't know if you're actually going to work on it, so I think it's not that great. But if they do work on it, then it's a good change. And then to your Firelands portal point, it's like, when you said the community dictates it, right? That's just the case. So you could, like, I don't know the win rates, but you probably are more aware. Like, Firelands portal is probably just a better card than Flamestrike, I'd guess, in Arena, like overall, maybe. Mm-hmm. But Flamestrike feels bad because it's like, oh, I made this army and now they're all gone.
Well, I mean, my question would be, where does it stop, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you know, like maybe 2 years from now, a specific card, Firelands Portal is now offered at 65% win rate or 65% rate. And then Fireball is at like a 40%. And like,
yeah,
how do you keep all these rules in check, you know? There's already so many things about Arena, like the C'Thun cards and the banned cards and Purify not existing and, you know, percentages of class cards being offered over like common, like neutral cards. Like these things people don't know. And me, because I do it for a living, I do know them. And there are so many unwritten rules where someone trying to get into this game of Arena, it would scare them off. Like someone like me who likes to really dive in, I would be like, oh, this is, the rules for this game are kind of dumb.
They're nonsense, right? They're completely nonsense.
It is nonsense. I should actually do this. Just like write a whole list of Arena things, you know?
No, it's absolutely ridiculous.
You mean like a rule book? You mean
it's lazy, like
the rule book? Okay,
like I don't know. It's it might just sound rough on the devs, but like Magic releases a set that is intended to be drafted. It's intended to be sealed. It's intended to be drafted within not only its own set, the first set is, but then the next set as well. Like they're doing a lot to actively balance draft, which is the equivalent of Arena and Hearthstone for those that don't play Magic.
Wait, so and is it a subset of the?
No, it's not.
It's the actual same.
It's the same. Okay.
You would basically open up a pack of Un'Goro Crater, and you would play a format where you play against only the other cards in Un'Goro Crater. Okay, and they set the setup so that it can be played like that. And because they didn't do this throughout Hearthstone's history, now we're in a position with Arena where these things have to happen because it's not balanced, basically. And it's a lazy way to balance it. If you balance it to start with, and yes, Purify is a bad card in Arena, but it doesn't matter that I gave it to you because, hey, I gave you these other good options.
Right. It's just
then it doesn't matter because it all evens out. But because they didn't actively balance it when they put the cards out, and they were lazy at first, it creates problems down the line.
Yeah, I like standard change if, you know, that's kind of reversed. I guess the problem is, like, when you have outliers in rarities, and I've gone back to that point, like, in the past where we talk about, you know, the rarity problem in general in Hearthstone, where every single set, an equal amount of epics per class are released, an equal amount of legendaries, rares, and commons are released per class, no matter what. So what ends up happening is I'm sure there's this design, like, Abyssal Enforcer probably should be a rare, you know, in terms of ability, but somehow it was determined that it would be an epic, a common. So suddenly Arena is out of whack because there's another card that's as complex as the average rare card that was already given to Warlocks. So now they're both battling for that slot, and there was a misattribution of the rarity icon. So it's like, I'm not too sure precisely how to fix the issue unless you allow like more cards per set to be rares, or if there's a way to like bump down, you know, weaker average rares to commons.
Do they always release the same number of rarities for every class? Like,
oh yeah,
yeah.
Okay, it's, that's the issue right there.
Since the beginning of Hearthstone, but it's fine. It's not a problem.
I think within that paradigm, you can still do it. Like,
yeah,
there's not a lack of solutions. There are solutions. They just aren't doing them. Like, there's solutions to designing the card. You just put more effort into the set. Honestly, like, it sounds like it's harsh on them, but the reality is you already know what your constraints are. And I don't think that it's impossible to design around those, you know? Like, I don't think that, like, for instance, you could just not do the same amount of rares for each class. But I don't think that that's necessarily like
the most elegant way.
I don't think it's constricting their design, the ability for them to balance. Like, I don't think that's the problem. I think that that's just like another lazy solution. Like, they could just take it away and then it becomes easy. But the reality is that balancing is not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be challenging. You just need to do it right.
It's challenging when you're trying to balance from like last expansion, you know?
Yeah,
I feel like they're always playing catch up to try to balance the last expansion they released. And that's what really screws it up.
Yeah,
when you add that into the mix on top of everything, it's too much.
I think I'd like to see a rarity revisit like before an expansion is released. I don't know how much of that happens, but just somebody taking a good hard look at the card's rarities and say, you know what, this epic should be a common, or the other way around, just to make sure that everyone just doesn't go.
I feel like they're doing that.
I think they already
pretty sure that we already complained about that, and they're actually doing that. Was Warlock bad before Abyssal Enforcer in Arena?
No, it was always.
It was
top,
fine.
Okay, right?
Top classes, yeah.
Top, okay.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen them adjust, like, rarities. And, I mean, yes, there have been things, rarities. Clearly, there have been cards that are way too powerful that were common. But we have seen them change it. So I think those changes are based on a little bit more than just the complaining of the communities. It's got to be a combination of the two, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I don't think that's an issue. I agree with Ratsma. I think that those shouldn't be a constraint. You know, just having like X amount of rares, X amount of epics, X amount of legendaries. I mean, I actually even think it should be just crazy weighted one way or the other, because it is all about correction. You know, like they're at, if they just started and everything was like balanced right from the get-go, then yeah, we could, you know, we could have these constraints and we could just like put good cards and have it like be balanced as we're going. But right now we do have skews. I mean, it's skewed like in all different directions, and some classes are better because of the cards are just better. So
idea behind standard.
it is, we
acknowledge our mistakes. Now we're going to actively work to balance.
I know, but we have an unbalance in the classic cards too. You know, in basic cards too. So it's deeper than that too, right? So I feel like just having the ability to correct would require us not having these kind of constraints where everybody gets equal amounts of cards. Like, I don't want that. I want like, okay, if Hunter needs help, or if Priest needs help, just give them more cards this release. It's fine. That, and then like the next one will be. I mean, don't do it to the point where everybody only plays Priest. Just correct it to an extent. However many cards you need to actually make a correction, not make it overpowered.
But I think it's actually much easier to, from the get-go, do an elegant distribution of rarity. I think that's just the easier way.
I really think that like there's something to be said for the distribution being like it is. And I really don't think that it's hard.
Yeah.
I do not think it's impossible to design what you're saying. I think you can adjust within the rarity. Like,
I agree. I
don't think it's like this hard thing. And if it is hard, then you pay the designers more and you get people who are doing more work or something. Like, you find a way to do it, because in Magic the Gathering, the reality is that they're balancing a lot more factors in that game, and they're doing it every single expansion, and they're doing it better than they are in Hearthstone, in my opinion. Now, one of the reasons why that could be is because Hearthstone could be inherently like flawed, maybe from a design perspective. But I guess because like, you haven't played Magic, Chapman, but like the factors that go into building a Magic set are so much more that I don't think it's impossible for the Hearthstone people to do that. Like if Warlock's too good in Arena, then I think there's a way. It's challenging, but I think there's a way to make the next Warlock set, like buff or nerf Warlock in Arena, and still do what you want it to do in Standard. It's just more challenging.
Yeah, I mean, you're essentially affecting the appearance rates by using rarity that way instead. You're balancing that by using rarity as the mechanism to do that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's basically
sure, okay. But that's okay. That's a lot.
Yeah, more manageable, that's within the range.
It's better than saying that Flamestrike comes at 50%.
Yeah,
whatever. Like, it's a better solution. Like Rasma said, than just having these shadow rules, so to speak.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, this is what they're trying to do with standardizing Arena, right? Is try to balance it. The funny enough, it kind of seems like the strong classes just got stronger. Now, like Warrior and Paladin seem really dead, and they were already pretty dead. In the meta, and now it feels awful to play. Whereas before it was challenging, now you cannot play those classes.
That's not good. So
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, now with the spells showing up at higher frequency, how does that help? Obviously, it makes gameplay a little bit closer to maybe what we see on, you know, ranked ladder, just with the possibilities of, you know, I don't know, maybe playing a little bit more of a macro game instead of just, you know, just each turn, like, you've got to throw something down, kind of that question answer type of metagame that you were talking about. Does it help with that kind of thing? Or if not, what does it help with?
So we actually got exact numbers from Ixar. Edwakta kind of baited him and like egged him on to give these exact numbers, because we'd never had like the exact proportions of what commons and basic and class cards and whatever you would get. Okay. But now we know. Some things are still unclear, but to put things in perspective, now we get 150% the number of rares that you normally would see in a draft before this change. 750% of epics, which is humongous.
750%?
750%.
Okay.
And also, you can expect a legendary on average, one in every run.
Okay.
I think the biggest change here is you're getting a lot more epics, whereas before epics were kind of like, oh, you feel your curve, because a lot of the epic cards are awful, like really bad for Arena. Too much setup, too much combo required, more constructed based, and you kind of need to build a deck around them. And so now you also, with the standardizing, take away the fact that we're changing rarity offering bonuses and rates for Arena. You're taking away GVG and Nex, which had a lot of 2-drops in them. And what tends to happen when you remove, add more rares and epics is you're getting less common and basic cards, right? You're getting less common cards. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those common cards were essential for making a good curve. So what we're seeing is a lot less curve stone play. And what you're taking is just stuff that discovers. You're trying to Cabal Courier into huge AoE spells, and you just throw things on the board where before you kind of set up like, oh, I can play this 2-2 on the board against this 3-4. It's safe because I have a follow-up plan to do exactly 2 damage to it with, you know, Volcanic Potion. Like, everything was so exact before. But now the game has slowed down so much because you can't build that early pressure because you don't have neutral cards like 2-drops. You don't have basic things to play Curvestone. And you're just picking Discover. It doesn't matter what is left on the board, what the board looks like after the trades that they make that you give them, because you're just going to Dragon Fire. And that's an epic card again, which is offered way higher. And it's just like huge blowouts in games now. You know, you just puke all over the board with bad minions, and then you just like...
It's early
in the Arena change, but one thing's for sure is that it is a huge, it's a ridiculously huge difference. Like, it's gigantic. Like, and this is something that Rasmus just covered, people don't think about. It's like, we know this from Standard, is that the 2-drops in Standard are significantly weaker than they were in Wild or were previously. And the just changing to Standard has a huge effect on the whole Arena, because all of a sudden the 2-drop slot's much weaker and it's not as much more powerful than your hero power. And like the ramifications this has are just, it's hard to predict it from a design standpoint. Like, as of someone who balances, like, you can say, well, we played like a bunch of arenas against each other, but it's just so tough to like see just how far it's going to go.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely.
2-drops, correct me if I'm wrong, Rasmus, was one of the most important slots, right? I mean, because you would play multiples later in games, or you know, obviously 2 on curve.
Yeah, it helps you curve out and smooth out. Mm-hmm, you can board clear and play 2-drop very easily. But I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I'm just mentioning it that this is how it is. I think we've been stuck in this, like, you know, you build tempo every turn meta since GBG because of the dominance of Paladins, and you have to not fall behind or else you're just dead. But, you know, we've slowly been getting away from that. We have more taunts that are very viable in Arena that we pick. So like, these rushdown strategies aren't as strong. And I just think the spell minion distribution has been flopped so hard that it's going to take a lot of players time to adjust to, you know, oh, I don't have to play a 2-on-2, or I can play a Tomb Spider on 4. I don't have to play a 3-5 just so I don't fall behind. So I think it's just a adjustment period, which may be a little bit awkward.
It'll be interesting to see the win rate from this month, the stats from this month of Arena.
It's just the games play out differently, which I love. I love that it's different, but we got to see it in the long run.
Yeah. I mean, I don't play much Arena, so I'm definitely a complete casual Arena player, but it bums me out a little bit that it's changed so drastically, because the one thing I've always appreciated about Arena is that it was a very good exercise in value trading, tempo, you know, establishing. I mean, just like it there was no margin of error in a lot of times, you know, and it was not forgiving in many, many games. So I've always appreciated Arena in that sense. But if spells, removal spells especially, become significant, then, you know, that sort of thing is basically removed. I mean, it just disappears, because removal spells make up for many mistakes. You know, that's the one thing that I've always felt, that the standard or the ranked play was very different from that standpoint. You could play a control deck and make a lot of mistakes and still win games, where, yeah, Arena, you couldn't do that. You made one mistake, okay, maybe you're okay. Make two mistakes, you probably lose. Like, especially if you make them early on in the game.
So, just snowball effects, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I love that. That's the one thing I loved about Arena, and, you know, wanted to eventually have time to really get better at it. So if it's just completely changed and it just becomes basically what we're doing on Ladder, that's...
No, it's not at all like Ladder.
I know, but it's getting different. Closer. I mean, getting a little closer.
I'll say something, though. Like, I like the Standard change, because a lot of the cards in the new sets, for instance, just were not used at all in Standard, and now they actually have some purpose.
Yeah.
Like, stuff like Fellowork Soul Fiend, the Spiked Hog Rider garbage, like, you just don't... They just don't exist, in the current play that we're used to.
True.
But in Arena, they're real things, and they're not even bad. So, and that's one big plus, I think. Just the amount of cards that you see in that format that you don't see in the normal one.
Yeah,
I think it's great.
Yeah.
It is.
What?
No, I mean, I feel like it is getting a little bit closer to constructed. I mean, just yesterday, yeah. I played a... Like, I've seen one Pyroblast, and I've seen maybe zero Ice Blocks in Arena in the past 3 months.
Since, oh, what? 3 months?
Mean Streets of Gadgetzan.
Holy crap. Right? Okay.
Since Mean Streets of Gadgetzan, I've seen one Pyroblast. No Ice Blocks.
I mean, I've seen Renos since the expansion in Arena. Like, I've been Reno Jackson repeatedly.
Oh, sure. But, yeah, I mean...
It's been crazy.
The first game I play, I get Ice Blocked. He has Ice Block, which I would never even put it on Ice Block. You'd never play it on Ice Block. He Pyroblasts me in the face. I'm at 9, and then he power blasts again after I pop the block.
I tell you, two of them in his hand.
It's those Zapex, dude. They're up, dude. They're back.
750%.
See, and that's the thing. Like, whether or not it's better or worse, is the verdict's, you know, it's not in on that or out on their
record. Yeah, it's depending.
It's just that it's a huge change, and it's gonna take time to adjust, like Ratsman said, to really get it down. Because it's the same game mode, but it's almost like a whole new.
Mm-hmm.
Card base, really, because I mean it is, but like it's like it has dramatic effects on the Arena, where in Standard, like, you still keep a lot of the same, well, I mean, besides the movement to Standard, but in Hearthstone in general and Ranked, it's kind of like, oh well, they released 5 new good cards, let me find out how to put those into my old decks, right. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Where like Arena, these types of changes have a dramatic effect.
Yeah. it's tough to even say it's like a really high skill meta right now, just because the high variance and how good some epics are compared to how bad others are. You know, you get offered like Doomsayer plus, you know, I haven't named all the bad epics, but as opposed to someone who gets like 3 Call of the Wilds, you know, it's, you know, a lot of it, I think a lot of it would be draft based and how lucky you get in the draft, especially with the added one, like usual one legendary per draft. Some people are going to have 2-3, some people are going to have none. It's going to be very draft-oriented and how strong your draft is.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the most important change out of all of them was that you can use golden cards now in Arena. So how do you feel about that? Yes. How do you feel
of
about
all
that?
All the changes.
I actually love it. I love it. Bring some style to Arena.
Did you have a lot of golden cards, or are you crafting them now? Or what's up with that?
I haven't pressed my button yet, but I think my account is probably worth like 400,000 or 500,000 dust. I have a lot of games under my belt. And it's like all Arena games, so we get a free pack every time.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a lot of
well, like,
stuff,
even watching Chalky, who didn't play Arena before, just like do the 30 runs, he's already gotten like 6K gold. He went from nothing to 6K. And then I was like, wow, man, this Arena thing actually gets you a lot of rewards when you start doing it. And
I'm making a plan for this. I'm gonna craft all the golden cards for the basic and common ones.
Yeah.
And just like work my way into like trying to make every single card golden.
There you go. Hearthstone achievements,
that,
man.
That a boy.
Gives you something to work.
Well, hasn't Crip been on this for a while?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
He's got it down to it.
I mean, you have some golden cards, right? Because
you open them.
Because you open them, yeah.
Yeah, there's,
like certain legendaries that have like four copies of Golden just waiting for them to get nerfed, but yeah.
God.
Oh, brutal. I had two extra copies of Raj.
Yeah.
Do you really? Holy crap. Yeah. You guys, man. I think I only have like one copy.
I've known that Rag was going to get changed or nerfed somehow for a while, man. It's a long time coming. Like that one I waited on.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Well, anyways, that's thanks for the updates. Definitely on Arena. And, you know, things are changing. Definitely good. I think overall that we don't have the stale meta in both Constructed and Arena. But we'll have to see what happens at least in the next couple weeks, and then we'll have another big change in April. So at least for the next 2 months, we should be okay. Okay, let's talk a little bit about HCT Asia. That happened this past weekend. It's the last region to complete before Bahamas. That's going to be happening in 3 weeks, I believe. This Asia one, for Asia prelims, was pretty wild, and I just wanted to see what you guys' thoughts were just generally on how different the decks were and the gameplay was. I don't know, a lot of people were mentioning the gameplay, especially that B787 match against Lojom or whatever. But overall, The Rat, what did you think about that region compared to EU and America?
People have always said that the APAC region is like one of the weakest, but I think they have like a lot of strong players. One major issue is that as Western players, you don't get as much exposure to the APAC region, especially like South Korea, for instance, where Lojem's like a streamer and he's like known player. The Australian players were like shocked to find out that I didn't know who Lojem was before this prelim. They're like, "Oh, everyone knows who Lojem is."
Mm-hmm. You're like, "No, I've never heard about
him." Anyone who's competitive, like who watches the scene, like knows who he is. I'm like, man, I've seen three OGN masters, and that's probably infinitely more than most Western, like competitive players. And I still didn't know who he was. But as far as like the overall, like people are criticizing plays, and like to go into Lojem specifically, I don't know if you see my Twitter chain, man, but I actually like loved Lojem. First off, he took the concept that I brought up when I was on the show last time about how you could just play decks that were geared to beat aggro without running Reno.
That's what he was doing.
You could achieve a percentage. He just did that. Now, someone could be like, oh, like his decks were bad or he's like bad or whatever. But the reality is that it you don't just randomly qualify for the HCT, okay? It's something that you work towards. And after he got into it, he had to actively, design these decks from nothing, because these aren't decks that you just seen and you just made better, or these aren't decks that you made a new archetype that's insanely powerful. He has to conceptualize this deck list in his head and actually make it. And then he has to test it, which is insanely hard. He has to find somebody who's willing to play against a deck that they'll never see. And it's hard to find players who are willing to do that, because it's kind of like a negative waste of their time, so to speak. The person who's playing against him in playtesting, like, to get to the point where he submits the deck list is already incredible, honestly. And the fact that he had made it that far with that strategy, which is actually a pretty effective strategy if everyone plays two Patches decks and two Kazakus' decks, because it's good versus Pirate Warrior.
Anything aggro.
It's decent versus Shaman. Yeah. So to get to the point where he's in the tournament, he's 5-2, is already incredible. Now, his first series on camera, I think Lothar was casting. Lothar was very critical of some of his plays where he saved the coin and stuff, and he was using hero power instead.
Right.
And Lothar even went like as far as to go on Reddit and comment on the thread and say that Lojem's play was just bad, and that he was like glad that he ended up losing. But in that series specifically, where he played Paladin against Pirate Warrior, I was in a call watching with like a lot of other good and professional players, and not only was Lothar overcritical, but he was actually just flat out wrong in a lot of the plays. And I think that's something that we see a lot, where, you know, it's easy to play Hearthstone from Twitch chat. Like it's very easy.
Yeah,
very
we all know that.
Criticize plays.
I know that.
But eventually you have these players who are, and then in the top eight, Lojem through, without a doubt.
Yeah, the defender play was a threat, for sure.
Lojem threw in the top eight without a doubt. And we see people would be like, wow, this player's so bad, they threw, like, I wouldn't have threw that. But eventually, I wonder when people are going to come to the conclusion that, hey, man, we keep watching these people get to the top eight. And I think he played well in his series beforehand. and then they throw. People don't, I feel like people don't really appreciate the pressure or the mental state that you're in after playing that many rounds of Swiss, or, you know, you're staying up all night because you're not, you're anxious. You don't get to play in many tournaments, so you're not like quite used to it. So you don't get the sleep that you want or whatever. Like, these are all factors that actually, believe it or not, have a negative effect on your play. And that's why we've always had players who do well in tournaments or do well and say that they weren't playing their best. I know a personal friend of Oskaka, he said that he won BlizzCon, but that's not the best he's ever played in his life, not even close. He thinks he had played better multiple other times where he's playing from the comfort of his own home. You know what I mean? So the level of play in tournaments is always going to be lower than the level of play, like, for instance, even like online cups, where the pros are also playing in those because they're playing from the comfort of their own home and they're playing in a little bit lower stress.
I mean, scenario. Like, the throw, you know, that he had against B787. Mm-hmm. I mean, that literally was the game that sent somebody to the Bahamas. So
yeah, and
it was like one of the final plays too. So it was just, I'm sure the pressure got to him for a second.
It would have been incredible for him to make it with not only those deck lists, but in that particular matchup where his opponent's lineup was so favored against him, to get to the point where you dirty rat those two acolytes out.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, it was a control warrior mirror, but his control warrior deck is severely tech to beat aggro. And he was, before the game, you have to look at the deck list as low gem, and you have to decide how do I win this matchup given my disadvantage and value. And he needs to dirty rat two acolytes 20 turns into the game when there's no more cards left in the deck. And this is how he's going to win the game. He got there, which is already pretty good. Like, most players wouldn't get there. Like, they think, oh, it's control warrior, you just get there, but you don't just get there. Like, this was a state in the game that was very specifically designed in his mind that he wanted to achieve. And he got there, but then he made the crucial error of not playing the sleep with the fishes instead of the blood to ichor and the other card, and it ended up losing him the control warrior mirror. He played all those turns, not necessarily right, but he had the macro line in his brain. He played all those turns and got to the point he needed to get to. Hit the dirty rats, and then just
didn't play.
Fucked up the very
But it's one of the one of those things where, you know, he hasn't been in that situation before ever.
No, like,
This is the first time. And some people are great at you know, just figuring out problem solving things for the first time, and some people aren't. You know, and obviously, the pressure plus trying to figure it out. I mean, time was running out too, I think, for him. And I think it was, right, in that particular turn. So he obviously made the wrong decision there. But you're right, though. That particular matchup, and folks that don't understand it with control versus control warrior, you know, the acolytes are huge cards that you don't want to play. Like, you want to get those brawled and disappeared, and, you know, like, because you don't want to go into fatigue, basically. You know, like, fatigue is a huge deal, so you don't want those acolytes to draw. So he wanted to basically pull out his opponent's acolytes so that he would be drawing, and that's what he ended up doing with the dirty rats. And so and just to give you, I guess, give the guys like a little, or just the viewers a little bit of a just a feel for what kind of decks he was, you know, bringing. Look at this Paladin deck. I mean, this is like Shield Masters and Bruisers.
Double Humility.
And Wicked
Humility.
I mean, these going decks are
absolutely insane. You have to be a madman to get to these deck lists. You don't just have to go against the grain. You have to, like, it's
full commitment. It's full commitment to a strategy. Like,
I mean, it's like somebody brought back like 2014 and said, let's make it novel. And they just went, all right, fuck it. This is the old school control pally, and we're just revamping it. Remove all the older stuff and make it like new again.
You could just make an anti-aggro Reno, and that would be what people consider strategy. Hoy did that.
Sure.
That's something that's it's within the realm of, like,
this is a derivative of what's out there. Yeah.
It's within like the realm of possibilities, but to go and make these decks is just, honestly, it's insane. And when it comes to the Logan play where he messed up at the end of that control warrior game, it's so easy to be critical in that last turn. You look at his hand, you see the situation. It's so obvious you need to play sleep with the fishes. But the thing is most people wouldn't even have gotten to that point in the match, honestly.
Yeah.
And even if like you can execute that exact play it's not like Lojum can't execute that play. He can execute it. It's not a play that's so deep that his mind hasn't fathomed it. You know, it's not like
ever.
It's this complicated play that, oh, if I had never seen someone else do that, I would never have even imagined, you know, it's like, it's something
that's the thing though, simple. Rat, is that like, you know, you explaining all this, you know, on this show post, people didn't realize that at the time, you know, that's the thing about Hearthstone, you know, like Hearthstone, like all these brilliant plays and these brilliant lines, they're not explicit, mm-hmm. like in the game itself.
And casters have a huge effect on that.
Yeah, of course. I mean, casters are the translator. Basically, they're the mm-hmm. translators for all of this. So, you know, we depend heavily on them. You know, and that's probably one of the reasons why it wasn't appreciated. And Hearthstone is one of those games where it's like you can make all the right moves and then just make that one last wrong move and the game is over.
Mm-hmm. And then he also misplayed another series too.
Well, the last game was... I think the last game was the biggest one.
He didn't attack with the weapon, which is a very obvious thing for people. But what people don't see in the turn where he doesn't attack with the weapon, and actually I think most players would say that he misplayed the all three of the last turns he made.
He should have moved the board too, the turn after that too. So
yeah, another game where he's not favored to win at all, but he got himself into a position where he was able to win. And when I say this, it's not like it's not like you can just do that. Even if you understand the concept, even if you're skilled, he actually had to hit a percentage basically of scenarios where that can be achieved. Like,
yeah,
you have to aim for it, but then you also have to get lucky enough that it happens. And then you have to execute it. There's like a three-step process. And he was just he came up short on the third step basically both times. But on the turn where he didn't attack with the weapon, what he was thinking is that he would need to clear a taunt totem if it rolled, I think. But then he could have gone a step further and realized that he could actually whirlwind execute a taunt totem.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But then maybe you would say, well, what if he plays two taunts against me? And there's a lot more in that scenario than just like, oh, my opponent's low, let me hit with the war axe and then let me hit again. It's more complicated than that. It on the surface level, it looks that simple. But when you start thinking, how do I lose this game? How do I not kill my opponent? Well, it probably involves taunts. Well, maybe I need this war axe to kill an O2 so I can push my Grom through. Maybe I need this whirlwind to execute to kill a 5-5 so I can get through with my Grom through two taunts, you know? Because I really wanted to connect with this 10, and it's not so important to me that I get the 3 in now.
Well, he knows the rest of his deck.
It's not so linear as people make it out to be. But it was definitely a mistake. I think he misplayed the three turns prior to that as well.
It's like a rant about Twitch chat.
No.
Like there's people who spam like, oh, misplay, lol, Twitch chat.
It was.
Is that a rant about Twitch chat, man?
This was a very high profile match, not because of the players. This is what I love too. It wasn't high profile because of the players and their storylines.
The misplay.
It was high profile because of the decks, the competition, and you know, like kind of how Hearthstone itself lined up. And I love that because neither of these players are big names, you know. And I really appreciated that, and a lot of other professional players I think did as well.
I think that's what we see in the APAC region a bit more. We see these commitments, you know. We don't see hedging at all. Where it is, I feel like what we see with EU and in America, they play the highest percentage decks, and you know sometimes they will like the strategies they make are really the decks that they bring. It's not necessarily the nuances in the decks themselves. Sometimes one card, sometimes maybe two cards, but not just like what we saw with Lojum here. But in the Asia, the APAC region, we see that a bit more. We've seen it historically. I mean, we saw like a rager in there somewhere, right? Like somebody was playing a rager, like in a rogue, which was like, okay, yeah, interesting. I mean, it didn't work out for him. I don't even think he ended up getting to play it actually. But you know, it's interesting to see just a different group of players, you know, with, I don't know, more risk-taking, I guess you could say, versus just high percentage play, you know, because you see that in poker sometimes. You see guys that actually, you know, have much bigger ups, much bigger downs, and then you see the guy that's very consistent, you know, and there's different styles of reaching it.
That's honestly, like, the more fun part of Hearthstone. It's like just, like, trying out new things, right? Everyone knows when a certain card, which is, like, a staple for most decks, is good. But like exploring and trying to discover like new strategies, I think that's the way to play.
Yeah, like even though you play Arena Rasma, I'm sure you can even appreciate this guy's deck list if you looked at him. I mean, like we're talking double sentience and all the decks. We're talking double hit. Like, this guy is so far way, man. Off. Yeah. Like this guy's so done, far gone.
I've it's done unreal. It before.
But I think that, play off meta all the time. Like I pick like horrible cards in Arena over a good card just to see what happens. You know, to see if I can like make the deck work.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we've all done it. We've all had those days where we've literally played 10 straight aggro warriors and we're like, damn it, I'm going to build a deck that just destroys control, like aggro warrior and nothing else. And then that's like when you put the double sentience and the double bruisers and just the craziness. But he actually did this, you know, in HCT, and that's why it's just completely amazing. Yeah.
The APAC region is the last region, which would allow... Yeah. Theoretically for more creativity because there should be an established meta by the time it gets to their their tournament. Like double patches, double Kazakus did pretty well in the first two, so Elogium has a little bit more wiggle room than maybe someone in EU. So I think that looking at it from a logical, like, well, why do they bring riskier decks? Is it just because they're riskier in general? I'm not so sure that that's necessarily the case. As much as they have a more established stuff to work off of in counter because there's been two HCTs prior to theirs.
You know, definitely congratulations to the four guys that moved on. You know, B787 ended up winning, but Pomblad, Samuel Cho, Yulsek also made it to the Bahamas. So we've got the 12 guys going. It'll be pretty interesting to see which region comes out with the champion here.
Also worth noting that all three regions, there is only 64 people in the tournament now, and most of the 64 are going to be people you know, people that are high profile just by nature. But we've definitely seen an increase in the number of established players doing well, I'd say. Even in the APAC region, if you look like after round five, the players that are in the running for making it, like a lot of them are the better people will consider the better players than the known players of the region. And we saw in EU, you have like Sho, Nairia, Green, like you have a lot of people that have been around and they know what they're doing or whatever, regardless of how you think their play skill is. And then in NA too, you have, you know, Frozen, Amnesia. You have a couple outliers within the thing because that's how card games work. But I think that you've seen a pretty good representation of skill in the Bahamas. I'm excited to watch. So.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So that's going to be coming up again in 3 weeks. We'll probably touch on it in the next week or two. So save a little bit more for that. But why don't we do some quick Q&A and then we'll call it a day, guys. So Ahmed N, he's like our regular when it comes to our questions. He has a question here. Which card underachieved the most and why? His choice is King of Stormwind, Varian. Turns out overcommitting to the board was not a smart move. So I'll start this one off with Noxious. What card do you think has underachieved the most?
I want to say Cho'Gall because it's actually good compared to Varian Wrynn.
okay.
I actually think the card can do something degenerate. It just doesn't know what to do yet. So yeah, I think Varian Wrynn was bad from the get-go for most situations. Unless you're like in a very specific spot, so maybe I don't feel the same way, but yeah, Cho'Gall feels like he's got something he could do that he just hasn't done yet. I don't know what it is about this card.
Warlock spells aren't as good.
I think what it turns out is that if you dip too low on health before, you know, on turn 7 right now, it's just not a thing. Maybe at some point the card has some viability, but right now it just feels like a miserable.
I think the card would be good in Mage.
I hear they have a 7 drop that does that, right? Like, I don't know, man. Heard something about that.
Like, Warlock taps, so life's already, like, kind of a precious resource. And then the cards, a lot of the Warlock spells, you don't think about it, but are, like, AoE. Like, Hellfire, a lot of the good ones are, like, they hurt your own Cho'Gall or whatever. Like, outside of Siphon Soul, and you're not about to play Karakazam just for Cho'Gall. So it's like,
God damn it.
I think the Warlock's, like, one release away from, potentially a Cho'Gall being good, if the right cards are released. Like, healing is a big issue, too, now that Reno's gone. So that's another thing added to trying to make Cho'Gall worthwhile. But Rasma, what do you think? Underachieved.
I'll give it an Arena twist.
Okay.
Probably Tenaris Hogchopper. Like, you mainly look at, like, the basic and common cards, like, the very common offered cards for Arena. But I mean, it's not that bad for stats, but you know, you actually like never see an empty hand anymore in Arena.
Yeah.
In the past, you did get into a lot of top deck wars, but the MSOG meta has shown that you don't even last that long against Warlock. But yeah, it's not
okay,
very good.
All
it's
right.
By the worst.
I don't think I've ever played that card in Constructed, but I got to play Arena more, I guess, to be able to play it. Rat, how about you, man?
Man, that's a tough question. Let me think. Let me think. Nigo, for a second.
Oh God, Nigo, why you got to do that to me, man? I needed some time too. I think the most underachieved. I mean, underachieved is like, how do you define that, guys? Like,
what's
well,
the card you had high expectations for, and it just fell flat on its face?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
that's the way I defined it. Like, I wanted Cho'Gall to be good because I mean, he's obviously good-ish, and he sucked. That guy wanted Varian to be good, and it sucked. Teneris Hawk Chopper, 4 forward charge. Seems okay. Turns out it's never good.
So. I would say so far, I would think something like, I tend to want to pick a Hunter card. So
okay.
Maybe Lock and Load so far. Even the Lock and Load could still be good.
No, it was
potentially
bad.
But
it did underachieve.
Yeah,
you're right.
It's absolutely underachieved because I remember even when Ray was on the show, and I mean Lock and Load was potentially, oh my god, this is like literally card drawing, you know, cycling and ridiculous amounts of card value. But the class has never evolved in a way that's even possible. I mean, there's plenty of spells. There's just not enough ways to make, you know, that kind of card value even impose itself in the game because it just dies. You just die too quickly, right? So yeah, I think that's my pick. All right. Murat,
yeah,
it's you.
It's honestly so tough for me. I think that I don't know. I get pretty deep when it comes to like the card releases, and I look at the, you know, people call it life coach math or whatever.
Sure, whatever.
And usually you're not too far off. I think that it's probably not a legendary or some big minion. That for me, it's probably something smaller that I just wanted to be good. And like, for instance, Savage Combatant, the Druid card.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah,
that's a good example.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I want that card to be good so bad.
It's good in Arena. It's great in Arena.
Oh, it's awesome in Arena.
It's found spots. There was points where Aggro Druid, Beast Druid was a deck and it still didn't even see play. And it's like...
it's because it has 4 health, man. That's the reason.
It's a 6
man,
drop.
It's...
no, it's a 4 drop.
No, it's
a
6
drop.
Oh, you're
talking about 6 drop with the... yeah. I know.
Yeah, no, it's a 6 drop.
Man,
yeah.
I feel like it's this thing where... that example, for instance, to me, shows just how important having an immediate effect on the board is, mm-hmm. and how important, like, stats and the... you know, I don't like using the phrase curvestone, but curvestone really is, because... 3 attack is a lot, and it should give you an inherent ability to gain card advantage, but the reality is that card advantage just doesn't matter.
Yeah, card advantage doesn't
and
matter.
That, to me, is just depressing.
I mean, that's the same thing as the Lock and Load. Card advantage does not matter at all, dude. It's just like,
yeah, you can have a hand
cares.
Filled with high mains, but you'll never get to play them because the guy dropped, like, Dr. Boom on curve. It's like, ha!
It's like,
welcome to Hearthstone.
I've got 8 cards in my hand, but you still get to go on the board before I do.
I
think that's one of the things that I don't like about the more you bring it up. Like, Lock and Load is one of those cards that in Magic is like ban worthy. Like, it's on the cusp of, this thing is beyond broken. What the hell were they thinking?
Yeah, this is.
And now in Hearthstone, it's like, what? Do you want to play this card? Really?
There's a discussion about how Hearthstone's designed. When I say, like, the inherent design flaw, maybe.
Yeah.
I think that something that, I guess, the developers do a brilliant job of hiding the design flaws in Hearthstone, honestly. Because I do think that the mana system and the resource system in Hearthstone is actually quite flawed. And I think they do a tremendous job of hiding it or balancing it despite that fact. Card advantage in Hearthstone is not really a thing because you can play a 1-drop and a Ragnaros in the same deck and then you can just curve out. Because of how lands work in Magic, you can't ever play a rag with a 1-drop. It's not possible based on math because you need to run a higher number of lands to achieve an 8-drop when you have it in your hand. And when you run a higher number of lands, you can't be aggressive because you have lands, not minions, to attack your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
But in Hearthstone, that's not the case. And that's why cards like Lock and Load just can't find a spot. And that's why cards like Savage Combatant just aren't good enough. And every time, as a player came from other card games, I see these cards, I'm like...
I'm so hyped.
But they never work
out. Oh my god, this card is like amazing.
And I think I finally, with Mean Streets, I think I finally gave up on the dream of hoping that those cards were good. And it's too bad. It's too bad.
Well, honestly, you sound so sad about it. Like,
I am sad about it too, dude. So, I think it's like all the similar players are just bummed out by
it. Yeah, I mean, the way I see it is, you know, just have fun with it. And like Hearthstone is more of a casual game. I think we should accept this. You know, you don't have to marry her, but, you know, like, don't worry, be worried that she's not wifey material. Just date her and have fun. You know, don't try to make this the ultimate card game.
That's why I love Ratsma, man.
I mean, I still enjoy Hearthstone. I still enjoy playing it. I just think it's a lot different than Magic and in that way. Like, I played Hearthstone. I don't play Magic, so clearly I like the game. I like the UI. I like the design. I like the way it looks. Like, I still enjoy the game in that way. It's just those types of cards don't work in this game and they work in that game. And I enjoy those types of cards, I guess, like Noxious said. They're fun. So,
I mean, maybe if the cost was reduced, like maybe it's just a matter of them costing it so absurdly low that then it's just by default playable. But I don't know if enough.
I think it's just if the games were longer, like if they were okay with the games going longer. And that includes like the health. You know, that's why I'm so excited about just a card that extends health, is because I've always thought that you know, just a very limiting factor, and they wanted it like this, or you know, the way to consolidate or just to make the game sessions concise is to limit it by the actual health. But that's very design restricting, and things like card value and that would become more and more of a thing if we had more turns. You know, if we just had longer games. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, you can have a whole discussion about how the design affects the game, but yeah, I mean, Hearthstone is very much intended. Rasma uses the word casual. I'd say designed to be short. The games aren't designed to last a long time, and the fact that they've done so well making it competitive, in my opinion, whilst within the constraints that they've been given.
Mobile constraints.
It's like quite good. I mean, the game wouldn't be where it's at basically if it didn't last, you know, 7 minutes or have short games or whatever. And you could say that's not supposed to be competitive then, but you know, we've chosen to make it competitive. So the reality is it doesn't matter to me whether or not it's supposed to be competitive. At this point, you know, maybe there'll be a time where like Life Coach, I think that's something I should consider, and you know, I might look for different alternatives, but I still enjoy Hearthstone. So
All right, let's see, one last question, Lee here, and it's arena question, so we'll pose it to Ratsma here. With the upcoming change to arena to a standard format, what do you guys think of expanding on the idea of arena in that you choose your hero, exclusively choose between two expansions and an adventure to draft from? With that in mind,
the player chooses.
You're able to draft a more refined deck in terms of synergy. For example, Blackrock Mountain, GBG for Max. Sorry, Blackrock for Dragons, GBG for Max, Gadgetzan for Jade. So basically, you would pick the subset of cards that you could draft from.
I get all kinds of like proposals like this in Twitch chat. Like, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And honestly, I love it. I love it. Even if they gave it to you randomly, gave you an expansion randomly, and then you face a deck with certain cards, you're like, oh, this guy has this set. You know, and then
the guy got, oh, this is cool.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, the classes are so defined to what they do now, and everyone picks in the same way. And they'll always pick certain cards, and you can almost guess what this guy's deck is made up of, especially at higher wins. You know exactly how they got to those higher wins. It's by combining themselves to the same winning strategy for that class. And generally, it plays out a lot like kind of like Constructed, where you know what's in their deck more so than you would think. By having like different expansions for different decks or for different for different decks, I think that's great. I think that's exciting. It changes up things and it makes the game not solvable for a very long time because you have to put into account how you draft your deck against, you know, a paladin from this expansion as opposed to a paladin from another expansion. And it just adds more depth to it.
Eventually there would be a meta that would kind of consolidate.
Yeah, eventually, but
it was
it would take a while.
Right now, everyone knows like Warlock. Like, I don't think it would be particularly hard to
find
the best. I don't think it would be hard to find the best expansions to choose from. So I don't know how much I like this idea for Arena.
Sure, but what if they got them randomly, right? And they don't get to choose? I think that'd be fun too.
Pick your hero, but you get the expansions that.
But then, like, the people who get the good one end up winning more often. I don't know if this is a good idea for Arena.
That's hilarious.
Yo, that's the whole point of playing Arena. When I first got into it, I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna draft a deck with like 8 multiples of a single card. It's gonna be great."
Yeah, that was
Rasmo
that's what I wanted to do.
Fun, I think, more than
I love it, dude.
Less about winning than the average person. Yeah. I think that I think that you enjoy playing bad things as well as you can.
Oh yes, I do.
And I don't think that everyone enjoys that.
I used to be different.
Don't like losing.
Oh yeah, I used to like try to compete for like leaderboards. Now it's like, hey, you know what? You're fine the way you are. I'm not going to marry you, but let's just have a good time dating.
Rasmus
each other.
Comes to the right place in Valuetown, or at least Valuetown's like the combination of that now. It's a combination of super competitive and the super fun stuff like that. So
I talked like two weeks ago about this, and it's just more ways to play Hearthstone. Like, I don't think this necessarily should be an arena format, but I have no problem with that being like a different format that they allow you to play, like outside of the current arena format. Like, I think that's an amazing idea, and I think it would be fun, you know. And then, like, because I think that right now people don't necessarily have the mentality that you have, Rasma, towards arena. But if you start a new format that's already set up, that doesn't have any preconceived notions, then they'll be able to feel like it's just something you do for fun, and it's not about getting the wins and getting the rewards. Because the way that the arena system's set up now, it's demoralizing to go 0-3 and play your best and if your deck's fun to most players. So I think that they want to do something like this. They shouldn't do it in the arena, but I think that they definitely should be looking into doing this, because they need to find more ways for people to enjoy Hearthstone, play Hearthstone, and engage with Hearthstone that are currently available. 100%.
Yeah. Like, that's Blizzard restricting themselves. Like, they talk a lot about why they don't add like a separate category for Wild Arena. It's like they don't want to split the player base, you know.
Yeah.
I think these restrictions they make for themselves make the game hard to access for a lot of people, you know, hard to, maybe not access is not the right word, but
engage, I guess.
Yeah.
It would just be nice if they would have, I mean, it doesn't have to go to the point where it's like a custom game section or anything like that, but even just like, I don't know what you call it, like a sandbox or something where like you can actually have no deck restraints. You know, like you can, you know, like, you know how we have a wild decks and we have standard decks and they're designated that way. That'd be cool if you could have a third kind of deck that's just, I don't know what you call it, free form
custom
deck.
Games.
This is the thing.
It's
like
a free form deck, and then you can play your friend or something like that.
Yeah, not necessarily Magic the Gathering, but any card game. You can just go to the store and buy a starter deck, and then Chairman, you can go to the store and buy a starter deck. We can just play each other, and we can just run like six of one card.
Exactly.
And we're just having a great time playing on the kitchen table, but in reality, like, we're not playing by the constraints that other players play the game,
right?
Like, at a high level at all. But it doesn't matter to us.
We make our own
rules.
That's what makes it so great.
It is. I used to play with like a 100 card deck.
Exactly. And then from that, you know, you start enjoying the game, and then maybe, you know, you look into like advancing your skill or advancing your dedication and like going to tournaments and refining your decks. But without that initial way to like grab somebody and keep them interested or engage them for a long enough time to convert them, you know, into consistent players, I don't know.
Like last night on my stream, you know, like we were just goofing off and Immortal Lion was on. He like just finished his, you know, the ladder run. So he was like all like relieved and stuff. And it's just like, oh, I can finally screw around. So I was like playing with him and I didn't actually do it on purpose initially, but, you know, I was like not even paying attention. I missed lethal or something. And I was like, you know what? It'd be kind of fun to see how many turns I can actually miss lethal. You know, like what's the record amount of turns I can actually miss lethal without him killing me. And like, just see how many turns it can be. Like, what's the record?
Could I do?
No, but don't ever kill him. Like, I mean, you know, whether you kill him or not, but the whole point is like to figure out how many turns you'll push it, like up to the end. Like, you'll literally push it, especially if Reno in your deck. You'll push it like to. I mean, I died like I think two times. I tried it, but I think I got up to like 8 turns. But it'd be kind of cool, even just on stream, you know, like if you're just streaming it, just figure out like how many turns can you actually miss it? And you don't actually give a shit about winning or not. You know, like that's a different way to play Hearthstone too. You know, there's all kinds of silly ways you could actually entertain yourself with the platform that is Hearthstone. So it's
with the game.
It's kind of funny.
The game.
Yeah, with the game.
It's very similar to like Overwatch's new like custom mode where you can like make bosses and stuff, right? Just customize the hero.
We talked about that. How they had those last time.
Yeah.
It's definitely interesting. It's you know, in reality, like it's all sociology and perspective. Like, I've played card games competitively for a long time, but when I played other card games, you know, I actually appreciated some of the fun things you're talking about. But when it comes to Hearthstone, man, I don't watch those videos. I don't find them entertaining at all. And it's basically because of how Blizzard has chosen to have me experience the game. Yep. Honestly, it's not didn't want to enjoy those things. It's just that because of how they have the ladder set up and because of how they've encouraged me to play the game, I just naturally don't enjoy those. And it's kind of sad, you know, cause I wouldn't mind being somebody who enjoys that type of thing. And you could say, oh, well, you can just do it. But
that's the thing.
Simple,
like, the reason why you play the game the way it is because it's structured that way. I think if like there were things that were structured that you would do these fun things for, like, let's just say there's a competitive environment. Let's say we do like a scavenger hunt of scenarios in Hearthstone, and we put a prize pool on that, and it all of a sudden became like a competition of doing fun shit in Hearthstone. I mean, then you might enjoy it more because it's like a competitive environment that just happens to do with just these silly things in Hearthstone. The issue is that we don't have those things. So the only thing that you can do is to go in and either like create this kind of fun thing for yourself or just play within the, you know, how Blizzard wants us to play the game, basically.
Well, I think Blizzard is coming around on that too. Like, you see them trying to incentivize you playing against your friend for that quest, the 80 gold quest, and then they have the tavern brawls. I think it just has to be more because like me personally, if I get that quest, I reroll it because it's a waste of time.
Yeah,
I don't have any friends, you know.
Nice. You need to add me then.
Like the tavern brawl, I will. I'll just play once. I'll get my card pack. I'll be like, okay, done.
I'm definitely rerolling the tavern brawl one every time.
Yeah, I'll admit I rerolled that one too.
Like I feel like it should be like if you play against your friends, it should be the same rewards for like three games, you know.
Yeah. I agree.
I do realize it's abusable, but there's also like things you can do to like stop that abuse. Like,
man. You know? Oh my gosh.
Is it a problem if it's abusable though?
People are getting free extra cards. Oh my
god.
Someone actually had to sit there and handcraft these packs, I'm sure, with their hand.
And that's so sad.
Now we have to give them away for free. It's not like they just created.
That's the thing. Like Hearthstone, you play against someone and you don't get to interact with the other person really. You have 60 emotes, you don't get to talk to them. Usually when I'm playing a card game or a board game, I like to talk to the person that I'm playing against.
Yeah.
And you don't get that. And they disincentivize that. People flock to forums and streams because of this. And that's why, you know,
the
forum community is so important to Hearthstone because you have no one else to talk to you about these things.
No, that's true. Engage like with. Reddit and everything. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
It's telling, like everyone says, when someone tries to add you and you're not like, hey, I'm about to make a friend today. You're like, this guy is pissed.
Yeah, he's about to DM me. And, you know, my experience, though, like, I think historically, if I added somebody and just see what they said, I'd have to say, like, the majority of them are positive, though. Like, I just think few that actually are bad, you just remember that. And that's like,
It depends on the context. Like, if you crush them in a fashion that you know is like, I 4-mana 7-7 dim, like, twice in a row, I know this guy's not adding me to say, dude, this game was fucking fantastic. I know the guy's just about to empty like two weeks of frustration on me. So there's a difference in the context, I think, when you get added after a game. It's like you win with Lock and Load Hunter. I think people add you generally to be positive. You win with like Aggro Shaman.
Exactly.
I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
Or you like literally top deck like the exact card that you needed to beat them. I don't think they're going to be saying anything very nice words to you. So I guess all I was going to say is that it'd be nice if I'm not even asking for a remote. All I'm asking is that we can create a deck that's free form. That way we can actually build arena decks. That's what you guys could actually do, Lord of the Arenas, like actual real Lord of the Arena tournaments and things. That'd be really nice.
It is tricky though, right? Like the whole,
it is tricky.
It's hard to get, like if they did some of these things, I don't know if the player base would have ever grown to be as big as it is, but I think it would be more solid.
I'm talking about things that we want, right? I'm talking about this at this point, you know, it's just
At this point now. Well, like if you think about WoW, this is a little off topic, but think about WoW, like when it first started, it was very guild oriented, and then they introduced flex queues and stuff where you can just play with like people you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they did this to basically, people didn't have time to like play it as a community. And then they gave them flex queues. People were like, oh, this is great. But then after a while, people were like, wow, I really missed the social function that I had when I was playing this game. And like, it's harder. It, like, they don't incentivize you to do that now. So now the game becomes like more stale when you don't have friends to play with. Well, I think Hearthstone's the same way.
WoW is... So Hearthstone is actually a single-player game. You know, it's a single-player competitive game, right? And you can say it's multiplayer because you're playing against somebody, but really your experience is single. It's not a team game. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. And, you know, WoW, they're, you know, it's... Even though structured as a single-player experience, it's really a team experience in many, you know, with raids, with PvP, with, you know, just a lot of those different formats and styles of play. So there's a lot of natural options of socialization in that game. Where with Hearthstone, I mean, with the current format, like what we have right now, socialization is in some ways like frowned upon. It's actually frowned upon because you're not even, you're like cheating in a way if you're like playing 2-on-1, you know, against like a guy, you know, and even though nobody cares that much about it, in terms of just what's the way the game's supposed to be played, it's not supposed to be played as like a bunch of people versus one guy, you know, and so they need to just create something that's a bit more, and they actually have to create a format to introduce socialization. That's what sucks about it. You know, they can't just like, oh, we're just going to add voice chat to this, and then all of a sudden that helps and fix that. That doesn't actually do
anything. Voice chat in Hearthstone.
That'd be terrible.
What's wrong with my North Sea Kraken, bro? Yeah, it was so big.
They have the Battle.net voice chat now, right? That's what you're talking about, Shanman? The new Battle.net
voice
chat.
Exactly. I mean, would you be talking to them during the games?
Voice chat is so ridiculous to me. Like, Oskaka misclicked and sent me an invitation to one yesterday, and I was like, like, I had never even gotten one before.
Oh,
like,
really?
What?
Yeah.
They have voice chat on the Battle.net client.
Yeah, they do. So.
Surprise. Yeah,
exactly. All right. Well, anyways, why don't we wrap up? Man, we've gone like 2 hours. So great show, guys. Thanks so much for having you guys on. And again, I think we got a pretty good an array of perspectives on just everything that's going on right now. And we still got like a few weeks to go just with trying to figure out, you know, what they're going to be doing and maybe even drip feeding cards. So going to be a busy few weeks coming up here. Ratsma, you got any shout outs you want to do? Where can people find you?
Well, shout outs to the Yes Boys, Rat Boys, Rat Pack. You can find me on twitch.tv/Ratsma. Stream every morning. Much it. Thank All you guys.
Right. Awesome. The Rat.
Yeah, shout out to my team, Splice, and I don't know, everyone that watches.
All right.
Or listens.
Listens, yeah. Watches and listens. Listens and listenership's actually pretty big. Bigger these days actually than the Twitch viewership. Noxious?
Yeah, shout out to Complexity and shout out to you for putting the episode together and getting the people on. As usual, it was a great show.
Suck up.
Actually, yeah. Rat, thanks for a lot for like last minute actually jumping in, because Firebat had that last minute take off. He didn't realize he had something already booked. Appreciate that, man. And thanks obviously Ratsma and Noxious for doing the show also. Let's see, what else I'm gonna plug? Just YouTube, always. Just the VODs are gonna be available a little bit later tonight, youtube.com/ChainManV. The audios on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google, they'll all be there too a little bit later tonight. We are doing a streamer showdown on Monday. I finally announced just the actual day and time. It's going to be 1 p.m. It's going to be on Monday, not Friday this time around. Nox is going to be hosting again, and we got a killer lineup, dude.
Oh, geez.
Look at this lineup.
Damn. I mean, has this been announced already, this lineup?
I tweeted it today, so like, we have to give Toast some real competition this time around, because he's just freaking winning too much. So
what's his score right now?
I think it's 3-0, right?
3-0.
He almost lost. Actually, it came down to the last question last time against Firebat.
Firebat almost had him.
Firebat had a 50-50, and he guessed wrong. And he, so it came
just
down
like ladder.
Just like ladder, exactly.
When's the last time you seen Crip in a button up?
I know, that's from a year or two.
That's from like 5 years ago.
Yeah. So anyway,
he had much more hair back then.
Yeah, those of you don't know what Streamer Showdown is, it's a game show that we do. It's game show like Jeopardy-ish, streamer show, Hollywood game nights mixed with party games type of thing. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And Ben Bro is going to be on, which is pretty awesome, given maybe he'll break down some mad mad raps too. I don't know. And then Crypt's going to be on Sky's Toast. It's going to be a good time, guys. So definitely check that out. That'll be on Toast's. Whoops. That'll be on Toast's channel on Monday. I'll obviously tweet out a little bit more as we get a little bit closer, but pretty excited about that. That's going to be it for Valleytown, guys. So for Ratsma, the Rat, Noxious, and myself, Champion V, we'll see you next week.
Peace.
Hey,
bye.
Bye.